We are not all here. So, unfortunately, we have to wait a little bit to give them a chance to be here.
When we presented last to this committee,
when we agreed we would start, so let's give them a couple of minutes. Hopefully they'll be here and then we can start. We'll have to make some changes to the program as well.
Thank you, Honorable Chair of the Portfolio Committee, members of the Portfolio Committee. Members of the Portfolio Committee, representative from the Department of Local Government, Amakhosi, from the National House and Provincial Houses, and all delegates that are here, ladies and gentlemen, thanks for the opportunity that has been given to us as a province to once again present in front of this committee on our inputs on the Traditional Leadership and Governance Framework Act Bill. I think one would run through the presentation as it is in front of us. Mpumalanga House of Traditional Leaders is an institution established in terms of Mpumalanga Provincial House and Local Houses of Traditional Leaders Act No. 3 of 2005. Its main aim is to advise the Premier on matters affecting traditional leadership within the province and serve as a coordinating office for the affairs of the traditional leaders. These are the following inputs that we make to the Traditional Leadership Governance Framework Act Amendment Bill 2008. On Section 2A, that deals with recognition of kingship, which states that Section 2A1 provides that a number of traditional communities grouped together in terms of customs and customary law may be regarded as a kingship if they are recognized as such in terms of applicable provincial legislation, and F, have a system of traditional leadership at a kingship level recognized by other traditional communities. Subsection 1F, we feel as a province that it should be deleted in its entirety, as what will happen if other communities do not recognize that kingship as they do not have thorough knowledge of that community's history. We know what happened with apartheid, where a lot of kingships were abolished because of lack of understanding of that community's history. As long as we believe that, as long as traditional leaders that are under that kingship do recognize that kingship and where the history, that does confirm that there is a kingship. It should not necessarily rely on whether other communities or other traditional communities do recognize that that kingship. It should be the people, the traditional leaders under that king, and also the communities under that, and also the historical background around that kingship. Section 2A, 5A, provides that the withdrawal of the recognition of a community as a kingship, as provided for in this Act, may only be considered where the majority of traditional communities under the jurisdiction of the kingship concerned request the president that the recognition of their kingship be withdrawn. As a province, we feel that this subsection will promote the unending, I think we said under, it should be unending, conflicts and disputes within the traditional leadership. The senior traditional leaders may mobilize other senior traditional leaders to depose the kings or queens for no apparent reason. Kingship, like any other traditional leadership, is a matter of birthright. Does not depend on whether communities need to change traditional leadership or not. So I think if we would allow this, I feel that kingship would be relegated to a voting system of some sort, where people would lobby and try and destabilize that kingship. So we feel that should not be the case. Section 3, establishment and recognition of traditional councils. Subsection 2C1 provides that the senior, I wrote chairperson, I think it's supposed to be senior traditional leader, shall be the ex officio member and chairperson. It is submitted that the word ex officio should be deleted or rephrased to read as follows. It will be senior traditional leader who shall be the automatic member and chairperson of the traditional council. In his or her absence, he or she may appoint a member within the council to act as chairperson. What we've discovered with this word ex officio, it's not an English term, and in most cases people would always have different interpretations as to what it means. When one talks of ex officio, other people feel that you're talking that, you know, that person is just there as a member, can't make inputs, can't, you know, people have different views, so we feel that it should just be pure, plain English that, you know, anybody can understand. On Section 3A, establishment and recognition of kingship councils. Subsection 2D provides for 60% of traditional leaders, including the king or queen, who is an ex-officio member and as a chairperson and members of traditional communities selected by the king or queen in terms of that community's customs, taking into account the need for overall compliance with paragraph B. This subsection, we feel that it excludes members of the inner royal family of the king, and as such, it will further perpetuate the current inner royal family disputes about the kingship and kings. So we feel that the king should work very closely with his or her inner royal family rather than excluding it the way we feel that is being excluded. And again, on the question of being an ex-officio member and chairperson, the sentence should be rephrased, who shall be the automatic member and chairperson of the kingship council. In his or her absence, he or she may appoint a member within the council to act as chairperson. Subsection 3 provides that the term should be aligned to the local government term. There was a feeling from the house. I think this was also part of the discussions yesterday, when it comes to kingship, a lot of senior traditional leaders were a bit sensitive, and they felt that normally a king to them is more higher, and if we downgrade that level to a local government, it might be problematic. So there was a feeling that the term should be aligned to national parliament, but I think it's something that we debated yesterday, and I think from yesterday we could see that there wasn't, based on the discussions yesterday, that there isn't a material difference that would happen if there would be an alignment. But I think the feeling is should be aligned to national parliament instead of local government. On subsection 8, the word King's Council should be replaced by the word Kingship Council. On subsection 10, D, and 11, the word Traditional Council should be replaced by Kingship Council. Section 4A, functions of Kingship Council. Subsection 2D provides that where a member of a kingship has to be disciplined for breach of the code of conduct, the premier must inform the president of such fact and also the outcome of the inquiry. This aspect needs to be left at the hands of the kingship council as to how it disciplines its members. The king and not the premier should be the one that informs the president. In conclusion, I know that the conclusion was a bit hard, but the conclusion reads that the bill is shadowed on the Black Administration Act and elevates premiers to actively participate in the affairs that are sole responsibility of the national government, especially when it deals with kings. The premiers have a role to play within provincial houses. Parliament is reminded to consider future problems that are being brought by the bill and should seek to evade repetition of mistakes made by the previous regimes. Thank you.
Thank you. like yesterday, shall we ask a question or two? Any quick questions now that occurs to you? I just want to say one thing to you, Nkosi Mahlangu. You see, the Constitution describes the relationship between the three spheres as interrelated, interdependent, yet distinct. And it expressly speaks about observing the dignity of each sphere. None of the others must interfere unreasonably in any other sphere. So the language was carefully chosen to avoid a negative regard of any of the spheres. So none should assume superiority of the other, even if in reality, legally speaking, the center holds. Okay, and that view is important because by implication you may be here to be suggesting local government is of a lower status, of minor considerations, and you know how Saga will feel when you say that. You can imagine. Not only just Saga, but ourselves as well. But I'm saying that the interpretation of that reference in the Constitution is important that way. But the other consideration is that, in reality, objectively speaking, no king or queen's area of jurisdiction straddles any province. So in a sense, it's sensitivity to those issues or regard to those matters. That what we are creating here is a mechanism for ultimately, how do we work together effectively so that you give vent to a meaningful engagement without in any way suggesting demeaning the status of kings and queens. There is no way in which I would imagine in its proposals, the intended or unintended, the meaning should be that that would be the outcome. But anyway, that's a point for discussion. I'm not ruling on that matter. I'm just throwing it in for consideration so that when we discuss, we haven't formulated any position on that. Any question? Yes, Ndate Gokochan. I just need clarity on the question of disciplinary guidelines, because the if I've heard the member, I'm sorry, I think so.
Yes.
I think it's on. I think it's on subsection 2, if I'm not, subsection 2D. While I'm sorting that out, let me do the next question, subsection 2C1, about the term ex officio.
Yes.
I think this, even the term ex officio was chosen also very carefully in terms of the legal aspects of meetings and the procedures of meetings. Now, the ex officio also has certain limitations as to what that person can do and cannot do. Now, if it's going to remove ex officio and put automatic member, it automatically means then that member has all the rights pertaining to the rest of the membership, which is exactly not what the ex officio means. So, in other words, then if you take out ex officio, say he's an ordinary member with all the rights and privileges as a member and no restrictions whatsoever. Whereas the term ex officio meant there were certain proscribed issues that he cannot attend or cannot do. I think we need to clarify. Thanks. I'll deal with the next one.
Honorable
Swate.
Yes.
Yes. Yes. Yes. Yes. Yes. Yes.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Good morning.
Mbuele.
Yes, yes,
yes.
Mbuele Fadi.
Correct.
Yeah, I actually need to get clarity with regard to the subsection 3A, establishment and recognition of the kinship council. Here it is saying that 60% of traditional leaders, but here according to the submission from Mpumalanga, they are saying that within this subsection, the inner royal family members are excluded. So I just wanted to find out as to whether are they also regarding the members of the royal family as part of the traditional leaders or as part of the family of the king. So I just want to find out why do they want them to also to be part of those leaders. So I just want to find that. That's my first question. And another one is with regards to the question of subsection 4A, functions of the kingship and council. Here it is also indicated that the aspect of the disciplinary actions being taken against the member of the kingship should be reported by the king to the president and not by the premier. So is it not going to be like where the king is going to report to the premier together to report to the president? Is it only the king that must do that? What about the premier? Are we also going to put aside the premier not being involved, because I think that those kinship will be operating within the area that is being under that premier. How is that going to happen? Thank you very much.
Chairperson, honorable members, Your Royal Highness and distinguished guests, good morning today. Well, first of all, thank Nkosi Mahlangu for the presentation on behalf of Mpumalanga. And in line with your directive with the chair, with Comrade Chair, and a few questions for clarity, Nkosi. The first one is on 2A, the recognition of kingship. I hear the concern of Mpumalanga that if this thing is not set up clearly, crafted clearly, there might be a possibility of senior traditional leaders mobilizing themselves, creating whatever new. In the light of, I may be raising a sensitive matter, but feel free not to respond it. I would have no problem. In the light of the result of the Commission on Disputes, and we know that there's a result, and the Commission has said, for instance, a matter of principle, that each nation or traditional community is one king is a matter of principle, if you read it holistically. What would be your view then, if then that is legislated in a way that, well, in South African kingships that we have are those, and mention them by the name without tying a person to it. And then the process of establishing new ones will have to go through that process anyway, so that we're not involved in any dispute. What would be your view? Would that sort of address the concern that you are raising under that paragraph?
Just hold it there.
Yeah.
Gosimashango, I want to ask the same question,
yeah,
but differently.
Yeah.
Acknowledging the wrongs of the past that the Constitution says we should. So when we undo those wrongs and the unfairness of what happened in the past, the result may be the process that Ngozi is suggesting. What mechanism are you saying must be brought to bear different from the one that's proposed in the legislation? So that's the question that we're asking.
Then the second one, that's flowing from my colleagues who had asked this question, but it is on the question of the 60% the kinship council, 60%. The experience that one is having through our constituency is fairly rural, traditional community. For instance, I found out that certain traditional councils, if you set up a law that there must be so much, you exclude other traditional leaders that should be part of that traditional council. It has happened in the Eastern Cape once. Now, it is proposed here that this 60%, which have also raised an issue, although it's not so clear, that's why I'm posing this question through to you, because you will assist to clear this mist in my mind. You may find that a king, for instance, let me take a king of the Amazon, from Ugu. Right, obviously, there's a number that is tagged here. It will exclude many senior traditional communities to be part of that king's council. How can we make sure that all the traditional leaders within that kingship at least have got a voice, if I put it that way, within that kingship, and what would the implication of those that are outside that kingship? How are we going to have their voice through that structure that is proposed in this bill? The last one, you talk about the inner royal family. Slightly different. I'm going to take it further. The Framework Act, as well as the White Paper, provide for a critical role that must be played by a royal family. The royal family. Now we are talking of inner royal family. I think in Mpopo they are calling it, what do you call it in Gosia? Oh, good. The members of the inner circle or something like that. Yes. But they've got the term with the understand of the inner circle. Can it be explained, this thing, this inner circle? Because even the royal families have created problems, practically. Because I'm a Nongonyana, all Nongonyana think that they are royal families, wherever they are found, because there's Nongonyana traditional leader. You see? So, That's why I would like you to share us your experience and of course what you mean by the INA, rather, in addition to what my colleagues have raised. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson. Maybe let me assist with the question of the inner circle, of which Mpumalanga is saying is inner royal family. According to my
response, okay, welcome. I should have done that at the beginning. In your response, you must respond to the assertion Mpumalanga is making, okay, that this 6% would have the effect of excluding the inner sector. But Unkosi Nonkonyana implies that in fact this 60% story is an indirect exclusion of others, and is that valid? How would they in fact feel? But he posed it diplomatically. I'm putting it crudely. Yeah. Please help us with that one.
Thank you. Thank you, Chairperson. Let me start with this question of the inner circle. Honorable members of parliament, the inner circle, it is the house which is directly linked to the chieftainship or to the traditional leadership, whatever you may call it. It is the house which is directly affected by the position. That is what we call the inner circle. They talk about who is supposed to take over, and then they take it to the royal council.
When you say the house, you are speaking an African language. You are not talking these houses that we are talking about here. Okay? Angit, agree that?
Yeah.
Okay. I'm confirming that. I'm just asking whether am I correct to say so. When you say it is the house that is making decisions about who is responsible for that, is that not what you're talking about?
In fact, maybe let me expand it again. There is a cross, there is a family, there is a house.
Yeah.
Now, you know, in terms of our culture,
yeah,
there is the first house, the second house, the third house.
Exactly.
These are the houses I'm talking about.
Exactly. That's what I wanted you
yes
to explain.
Now,
you are not,
the,
yeah,
the inner circle, it is composed of that family. It is that family. It is that house. I mean,
it's a family concept.
Yeah, it's a house which is directly affected by the traditional leadership. And it is the one which I think which the Mpumalanga house is talking about. Yes. And it is the one which identifies, which does everything, and then informs the royal family of the result of their interactions. Now, is that okay with that first question of clarifying?
We are lawmakers.
Yes.
What we want, what we are asking Bamasam now and the you as the leadership involved here,
yes,
is how effectively can that mechanism be provided for you in law?
Okay.
This is what I think you're talking about. So, by when you argue that this, it is excluded.
It is excluded in the bill.
But by deletion, it doesn't solve the problem. Because the house exists and we continue to make decisions. Must we make provision for it in the legislation? Or in the way we formulate the legislation, how will we make sure that we do not do the harm that he is seeing us doing? So that's the question.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, I think as the honorable member Ngosi Nonkonyana alluded there. I think it would be difficult for all or maybe everything which is affecting the institution to be included in the bill. Honestly speaking, it will be very difficult. Some of these issues are traditionally based things, so that unless if we are saying this one needs to be included, maybe because other communities who are not aware of this position, and maybe on the other hand you will be introducing a foreign culture to another community. Say for example, this issue which we are talking about now, it involves the people in Limpopo, and maybe it is not practiced in KZN. Now you are introducing this foreign culture in KwaZulu-Natal, which is not practiced in KwaZulu-Natal, which is only practiced in Limpopo. So the question here should not be for the parliament to force foreign cultures to other communities. No, it should be to say, let individual province where there are different cultures, that province look into those peculiarities. The province itself, it must look into that. In other words, in their legislation, they must include those peculiarities. Yes, we should not centralize this into a national legislation, which is giving a framework. So that's how I think maybe we can take it. Let me quickly maybe respond to that next question, that one of 60%. I fully agree with those who are saying this one will exclude other traditional leaders, particularly senior traditional leaders. Because the question here is that each and individual traditional leader is representing his area in that council. You know, it is the same with the question of the executive committee of the National House. You cannot exclude other provinces. You cannot at all. Because at that executive, we need to understand the issues from those provinces through the leadership of that province. So, on this one as well, I think we needed to understand it through along that line, that individual senior traditional leader need to be represented in the King's Council. Thank you.
Thank you, Ndabezit, for helping me with to answer some of the questions. Yes. Now, I think maybe I would sort of like try and give a view in terms of the inner royal family. Maybe one should start there. Maybe firstly say that as a province we are in the process of, because I think there's always been misunderstandings in terms of who comprises the inner royal family. So we've tasked a committee to come up with a definition that would define who is an inner royal family, that would cut across all nationalities that are represented within the province. Because I think normally you'd find that in each and every nation, it would be a bit different in terms of who normally comprises the inner royal family. But I think we all know that the immediate family of that traditional leader cannot be excluded when we're talking of the inner royal family. His uncles and aunts cannot be excluded when you're talking of... Okay. All right. Okay. So they cannot be excluded. And then you'd have maybe people that were born with his father and or with his grandfather, you know, that cannot be excluded. Those would be your seniors within the family. I think when each and every kingship has some form of a protocol, they have a role that this inner royal family that it plays. And we feel that within those protocols and the roles, it would be difficult really to exclude this inner royal family, because they were the ones that initially formed the King's Council. Because the issue of the King's Council is not something that is starting now. The King has been working within some form of a council. And now, when we're coming up with this new structure, it automatically removes everybody that was there within the King's Council. So hence we're saying, if we exclude this inner royal family, or because that's, they're working as the King's Council, as the inner royal family, then we might further, we might further strengthen the disputes that are there, because people will be feeling left out. Because in most cases, it is the belief. Maybe if I would make an example with our nation, how it works is that even if I'm an Inkosi, but I'm an Inkosi on behalf of that family, and if then one would exclude this, I think it would sometimes create a problem. So we need to find a way of how do we include them.
There seems to be a great contradiction between what he has just said and what was earlier on.
No contradiction.
May I, with your kind permission, please?
Right.
My apologies, please, Chairperson. In the sense that if I heard the Chairperson correctly there, he was referring to several houses of the King, and one of the houses would be the one where the lineage code goes on, excluding the other houses. Whereas the interpretation or the explanation that has been given by Nkosi Mahlangu, not only does it include these houses, it also widens the inner by including uncles and aunts all around that tradition. That seems to be the understanding that I'm getting.
That you are getting, yes. Now,
yes, sir.
It is incomplete.
Okay.
Because what you didn't hear was the good time. They are particularities and particularities in a variety of areas. This is one of them. This is not a contradiction. They coexist. Not as a polarity, they coexist. Then they are getting too expensive. So it was a contradiction. If it is a contradiction, it appears it's not. It's one of the particularities that exist. You go to some of these, Mokuma Bunda, fix them, it will give you a different one. Might give you a different impression. Not a contradiction. That's precisely the point he was making, that we shouldn't get to this because this must be done in his province. In his province, we have particularities that must be taken on board.
That's it.
Am I correct?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
What they fought for. They fought for.
And please remember, this is a discussion.
Yeah.
We're not taking any
position. No,
we're exploring.
Exactly.
Yeah. No, thanks. I understand exactly as you summarized, Chair. Then my question is, why would be that? Why would be in Africa, including South Africa, in Africa, being a different version of what a family is? I'll start there. And then what an inner circle or inner whatever of that family is, I'm aware of the dynamics within. I'm aware. But why would that be? Please assist me, of course. That's why I'm lost.
Why should there be a difference?
I understand dynamics within. Let's say, if we say family is this, but there are dynamics within. Because of their cultural peculiarities, I have no problem with that. But in Africa, why must an African define a family different from another African?
Let me answer you.
You see, tradition and custom is dynamic. Families and who makes decisions is determined by power relationship inside that family, and they are ever changing. Always in a state of flux, not just in Africa, everywhere else. That is the explanation for those multiple realities. The challenge
is whoever in the royal council of elders wields authority and power. It could be a matriarch. It could be a patriarch. Mm. Determine those relationships. Mm. They are ever changing. So there's no way in which by legislation we can, what is the word, freeze them into commonality. We might want to find, this is why the legislation speaks about this being a framework, to run away from attempting to freeze it into a, what do you call it, a difficult to manage coherence, which doesn't exist. Anyway, the U.S. traditional leaders will have to work to generate a common platform at some stage. But I don't know why you're asking the question. Why? That's a dangerous question. Mm. In that, I don't know where it leads, but what I'm saying is that it produces answers that are very interesting.
Yeah.
Yes.
Let me just explain why. The policy and the law, as it is, gives power to a royal family. And if then we are unable to make a definition of what this royal family is in a state of flux, it's going to lead to numerous problems when we actually implement that law. Let me take an example, sir, without coming to any specific case.
Yes.
We know that royal family is the one that say this is a traditional leader.
Yes.
Is the one that say, well, we're tired of your mischief, remove.
Yes.
So they've got that power.
Yes.
Okay. Now, you may find that how you determine the inner circle or inner royal family is, in terms of my culture, it may be matriarchal.
Yes.
Put it that way.
Yes.
And then within that inner circle, there may be only males. And they decide that no, we'll change from matriarchal to patriarchal.
Mm.
Yet we have given them that power to decide. It is within that context that this thing, of course, must help so that it is clear, so that it does not lead to any other confusion and instability in the country in the future. It was in that context that I was raising it, sir.
Yes.
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 Would the
honorable
chairperson, when he reforms, also include this question that I'm
going to press your button? My apologies.
Whether it would help us to try and find out exactly what the inner royal family is, to say what is the outer royal family. The reason for that is that now, when you explain in class to a student what darkness is in a lighted classroom, what you do, you take away the light and then say, there's your darkness. Now, what we are saying is that now, when they say this is the inner circle, they must tell us who is the outer, so that they have an understanding why is it that those are the outers and why these are the inners. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you, Chairperson. Firstly, I think let me address the question which was raised by Councillor Konyan, and you responded to it very well. But I just want to cite one example to reflect on that. There are peculiarities throughout the country. In my culture, if the Kosi has passed away and we want to get the person who is supposed to take over, that house will meet the house itself, and then they will invite the cars. If you follow Muvang, what is happening on Muvang? That Makazi, Kazi. The Kazi. It is not Makazi, it's Kazi. Specifically for that. Now, that family will invite this this cousin, and then they will relate the story to her, and then she will take that message to the royal family. Now the royal family is composed of various houses from the same family, and it is normally the one which is always captured in our legislation. Now, I think it is also responding to what he asked. Why this royal family and the inner? I said earlier on, the inner family, it is the house itself, the house which carries the position of the traditional. Yes. Now, it sits alone there and talk about that, and then decide, and then come to the royal family now, where the uncles, the other Bomakazi, and the likes, where they gather, and then they inform them of the decision. So this is how this whole circle, it is done. Now, which other question, maybe, which was asked, which I did not respond to? The outer. No.
You've answered it.
Okay, maybe.
No, you've answered it. It appears like a joke.
Yes.
But you've answered it.
Yes. Okay.
There is that house, that side.
Yes.
But not communicated to the media family, royal family, which is told. This is the story. So that's your answer.
Yeah.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. I just wanted to clarify two issues here.
Let me ask you this question. You are going to make a presentation. I think I'm not managing time properly because I'm intellectually stimulated by this debate. And you're not helping me conduct this debate. All of you. So, which I'm not managing well. But you're not helping me. It's the problem of a participating
chat.
Is that okay? All right, no, this is what I was trying to say. But I think we must move there. In fact, let's do it immediately. Give us your presentation.
Oh, sure.
Okay. But I realized that I wanted to say something.
No. It was just one minor issue with my leader there, Kutama. The inner circle. You say it is that house that is having. I understand you. Let's say it's Kutama's house, and Kutama has got three wives. What is the inner?
The house. Those three houses
are inner.
No, there is a house.
I could talk to you.
The one which is holding the power there.
No. It's Kutama who is holding the power. He's got three wives.
Yes. That is the second house and the third house.
Yes.
That's how we did it.
Yes.
Now, the first house lady, which is the one which was brought by the people, it is the one which is holding the power. It is the inner circle, the one which,
So it will include otherwise.
Yeah, in that inner circle, they are not included. Okay. But in the royal council, they are involved.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson.
Yeah, no, no.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson of the Portfolio Committee. Members of the Portfolio Committee present,
Amakosi also present, and officials present. Firstly, I want to make an apology on behalf of my chairperson, Nkosi Mawosu Kilis, that he would have liked to be here, but due to the bereavement that he is faced with at present, he is unable to come here. And also, I want to make an apology with regard to the... Yes, it's only one corporate chair. I'm standing here on behalf of KwaZulu Natal Chairperson Nkosi Mawosu Kilis. The House of Traditional Leaders of KwaZulu, hereinafter referred to as the Provincial House, has serious reservations on the National House of Traditional Leaders Bill, hereinafter referred to as the National House Bill, and the Traditional Leadership and Governance Framework Amendment Bill, hereinafter referred to as the Framework Bill, and collectively referred to as the Bills. Honorable Chairperson, I will jump the background for the sake of time. Members will read the background on their own. I'll go to paragraph 6. The full description of the list of broken promises made to the traditional leaders will require many hours, and one does not wish to overlabor this committee's attention. However, one more broken promise should be mentioned as it contradicts our comments. Since the beginning of the discussions on matters of traditional leadership, it was recognized that more than in other fields of society, the reality of traditional leadership is diverse across the country. Traditional leadership has different features, preeminence, and roles as one moves from one province to another. Therefore, it was promised that when dealing with traditional leadership, the constitutional framework would be respected rather than subverted. As you may know, in terms of our constitution, provinces have exactly the same amount of legislative competencies in respect of the field of traditional leadership as the parliament has. The two legislative competencies are concurrent and identical in scope. In terms of the constitution, if a conflict develops between provincial and national legislation, it is the provincial legislation which ordinarily prevails, which highlights that ordinarily these are the matters to be handled by provincial and not the national legislation. The national legislation only prevails over the provincial one in exceptional limited cases listed in section 148 of the constitution, which are special situations in which national uniformity is necessary. Because in respect of traditional leadership, there has never been national uniformity, and there is no need to forcibly create uniformity. It should have followed that the regulation of traditional leadership to be left to the provinces. In fact, the framework bill pretends to do so by purposely setting up a framework to be implemented by provinces. However, when one looks at the details of the national legislation, it becomes clear that the provincial legislatures are left with no space to legislate and only with the option of following national dictates or defying national legislation with the foreseeable outcome of political conflict and possible constitutional court litigation, all of which is not likely. Therefore, our first submission is that Parliament should reconsider its role in this matter and accept that it has usurped a role which should have been exercised by provinces instead. Our final preliminary submission is that traditional leadership is a sub generis institution in that it is not and ought not to be part of the government of the country. It is an institution which stems out of the traditional communities as a specific model of societal organization, and in that respect, it is and it ought to be regarded much more as an organ of civil society than an organ of state. Therefore, when providing about traditional leadership, legislation must recognize to our institution a certain degree of autonomy, which means that whenever possible and appropriate, it must allow matters to be regulated by ourselves rather than dictated to us. Against these premises, I cannot submit our specific comments on the two bills, starting from the framework bill. One must note that this amendment bill and its principle bill and its principal bill are frameworks only in name, when in fact they subvert the constitutional scheme by taking over that which should have been regulated by provinces. In so doing, they impose a uniform scheme of regulation which may be appropriate in some provinces, but it is inappropriate in others. Many of its provisions are utterly inappropriate and indeed are repugnant to the history, culture, traditions, and laws of the institution of traditional leadership in KwaZulu-Natal. The provisions regarding kingship and the kingship council are foreign to our culture and tradition and are bound to create long-term conflicts which within our provincial society. They are nothing short of a formula for disaster which may not erupt immediately but will undoubtedly come to pass given enough time. The provisions on kingship and kingship councils proverbially storm in where angels fear to tread, not only imposing a system which is unknown and foreign to us, but also replacing flexibility within rigidity. The flexibility of the dynamics surrounding the Zulu royal house and monarchy has, over the centuries, prevented many conflicts and avoided much bloodshed. For this reason, a Zulu royal council has never been formalized and its existence, composition and functions have varied from time to time to adjust to the often intricate dynamics within the Zulu monarchy and our system of traditional leadership. Setting such dynamics within a fixed mold will either break the mold or make the dynamics exploded within it. Furthermore, Chairperson, there are provisions in the framework bill which are utterly inappropriate to our conditions and situations. It is preposterous, outrageous, and foreign to our traditions that one would impose on us the prohibition that members of provincial and national legislatures cannot be members of the kingship council. This fundamentally subverts the notion of leadership and hierarchy existing in our reality and tradition, for it will force an artificial split between those who hold political power through the electoral processes and those who hold the power of influence within our monarchy. The other fundamental flaw of the framework bill as it relates to the kingship council, which makes it totally foreign to our culture and traditions, is that it tends to provide for all that there is to be provided for, with the inescapable conclusion that has not been provided for in the bill, and in other existing pieces of legislation, would be placed beyond the law. In fact, the bill is the final piece of legislation covering the entire field of that which there is to be legislated about in respect of traditional leadership. This bill does not provide for the institution of the traditional Prime Minister of the Zulu Nation, thereby forging the institution to be placed beyond the law, even though the institution exists and will continue to exist within our Zulu law, culture, and traditions. This is another formula for conflict and disaster. Another element which is foreign and unacceptable to our traditions is the role which the Premier is called upon to exercise in terms of the framework bill in respect of the kingship council. The role can only belong to the monarchy and its traditional prime minister. It is totally inappropriate within the context and history of KwaZulu. Like many other pieces of colonial and apartheid legislation, the framework bill is trying to rewrite our culture and foist foreign traditions on us. The framework bill also constitutes a dishonorable breach of a fundamental promise entrenched in the process of constitutional negotiation from apartheid to democracy. In fact, the interim constitution was amended by Parliament, which was specifically recalled for that purpose in March 1994, to add a new binding constitutional principle, which was added to the other pillars which constitute the framework of our present democracy. Constitutional principle number 18 was amended to provide that the powers and functions of the provincial constitution should not be substantially diminished. This provision was to incorporate and include another provision adopted at the same time and for the same purpose. namely section 160, subsection 3, paragraph B, which required that the role, authority, and status of the Zulu monarch shall be provided for in the constitution of the province of KwaZulu-Natal. This cornerstone of our constitutional settlement requires the matters relating to our monarchy to be dealt with by people of KwaZulu-Natal only by means of a constitution which they are to adopt with the support of at least two-thirds of their elected representatives. Instead, the framework bill deals with matters relating to the Zulu monarchy by simply majority of the elected representatives of the whole of South Africa, and does so by completing a number of other pieces of legislation adopted in the same manner, which leave no space for the provincial constitution or legislation to do, say, or change anything. The historical consequences of this final breach of trust cannot be underestimated. Effectively, this means the KwaZulu-Natal as a province may claim in the future a role for its monarchy and for its provincial government which goes beyond anything provided for in the present constitution and in our current legislation. In fact, there has never been any doubt in our minds that the cornerstone of the 1994 constitutional settlement was maintained in the final constitution, which at section 143, subsection 1, paragraph B, extended in respect of all other provinces the notion that monarchies are not to be dealt with by means of laws adopted by a simple majority, whether national or provincial, but only by means of a provincial constitution adopted by two-thirds majority. Therefore, over and above, the political and historical implications of this breach of trust is in all likelihood the provisions of the framework bill relating to the inner organization of the monarchy and the so-called kingship council are unconstitutional. There are other points of details of the framework bill which are unacceptable to us, but because its overall purpose and structure is so repugnant, it is not worthwhile to take this committee's time to point them out individually. Therefore, I shall now move to the National House Bill to point out that the flaws we see in it flow from the failure to recognize the traditional leadership, the degree of autonomy which the institution must necessarily have. I beg to draw back to the Honorable Chairperson here because this bill was discussed yesterday, but for a point of privilege, Chairperson. In terms of the bill, the National House autonomy is restricted instead of increased, and this organ of state is given much less autonomy than that provided to other organs of state. We must stress that the National House was also part of the constitutional settlement as it was provided for in Section 184 of the Interim Constitution, where it was given quasi-legislative powers, including that of drafting legislation and keeping a watching brief, both this Parliament as well as the National Executive. In terms of the Interim Constitution, by virtue of its functions, it can fairly be said that the National House was almost on the same level as the Parliament and the National Executive, albeit junior to both of them, and it was institutionally placed between the Executive and the Legislature, sharing characteristics of both. Even though all the details of the constitutional section have not been carried into section 212, subparagraph 2 and subsection 2, paragraph B of the present constitution, there is no reason to believe that the role of the National House has changed. In fact, the present constitution merely states that this parliament may establish the National House, but does not indicate that the National House ought to be anything different to what it was under the interim constitution, and one must intend it to be, broadly speaking, the same type of institution. Therefore, this means that the parliament is under the constitutional obligation to use a certain amount of deference when legislating about the National House and limit as much as possible any interference with its functions and autonomy. For this reason, we find it untenable that the House be given less autonomy, own resources, latitude, and broadly speaking, respect than the many other organs of state directly and indirectly provided for in the Constitution, and even the more numerous ones that are not mentioned in the Constitution. The National House is treated like the Cinderella within the plethora of Ogando State. It is not given the power to present to Parliament its own proposed budget, even though, through the good offices of the competent minister, it is not given any entitlement to own resources, leaving the matter within the discretion of the national government. If the National House is to play its role between the national executive and legislature, it should not be beholden to either and should share it in the features of both. For this reason, it is totally unacceptable that this national legislature should dictate to the National House matters relating to its composition and qualifications, which ought to be dealt with by National House through its own rules and autonomy. It is not acceptable that provisions be made for the disqualification of members who also serve as members of national and provincial legislatures, as the National House needs this type of cross-pollination to be able to exercise its functions efficiently and effectively. Also in this respect, there are many other problems we have with the National House bill, which for brevity's sake, I do not wish to be labor. As with the framework bill, the National House bill must also go back to the drawing board in a process in which legislation is no longer written about traditional leaders, but rather with traditional leaders, for traditional leaders and through traditional leaders. Let the National House redraft these bills to contemplate the role which the interim constitution envisage it to play and with the present constitution implicitly requires. Let us not conclude the long process of policy formulation and legislation on traditional leadership with yet another act of betrayal. I hope that this Parliament will rather seize this opportunity to turn the page and begin a new process which will be reflective of a new attitude towards traditional leadership. We hope this will also characterize the actions and policies of the next government after 2009 elections. I thank you.
Thank you very much, and you must convey to Nkosi Buthelezi that we appreciate the effort he took to respond to our invitation to submit his views. We appreciate that. We also appreciate the memory that he brings to the discussions he says were involved in the formulation of the interim constitution and the constitution itself. And obviously, we thank him for his interpretation of those views and so on. I however feel that the language is combative. It imputes motive to us and intentions that are completely not true and quite frankly unfortunate. And that, we would have done with acceptable language we would have found appropriate for this kind of forum. But that's just what I thought I should speak out on, right, outrightly and so on. However, that's his contribution, and of course we have to expect that there will be diverse views, and however strongly they are also articulated and so on, we must accept them into the pot and cook them appropriately in the process of our discussions. But thank you very much for that. Any questions, comments?
One would seek more clarity when it comes to, with your kind permission, Chairperson, thank you for the presentation. When it comes to an assumption or a presentation that says we must not accept into our ranks foreign ideologies or foreign structures, without defining what those foreign ideologies and structures are. Because when there are terms, for instance, when you speak about a budget for the House of Tradition, that is a foreign terminology. They never had budgets before. When you accept one form of foreign culture and rejecting the others, one would need a definition saying these foreign cultures we would accept, for instance, salaries for kings, salaries from motor cars for this, aeroplanes for this, but won't accept these other foreign cultures, so that one has a clear understanding of where this foreign concept actually is leading us to in terms of clarity. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you.
Chairperson, honorable members, I think, first of all, thank you to Ngozi Mabunda for the presentation. And I'm sure the chairperson was seeing on all of us to convey our appreciation. And also, of course, the condolences to the royal family on our behalf. Now, two things or three things in Gosia. The one is on, I think, the question of monarchy, that it must not be touched. The act as is now before these proposed amendments say, amongst other things, that there will be no role for the king as such. It will be determined by the president through a proclamation. That is what is. I would like to know the view of the provincial house around that question. If they will take it out, these provisions, will that satisfy them that we must not amend that law, let therefore allow that legal framework to continue, bearing in mind the peculiarities that are set out here, although I would love if you can share with us briefly this monarchy of Amazulu, different from any other monarchies in South Africa, because we need to deal with that. But the second point is the question of the traditional prime minister. Chair and honorable member, I think we did undergo one study group in Africa. We went to Ghana, Uganda, and you know, I think we can. I think it is one of these African countries, forgotten which one now, this concept. If we could, as a parliament, be clarified, what is this traditional premier? Is it an institution of its own? And if it's so, is it an area that we must not legislate or actually create a framework for it to develop, that type of thing? Or is it one of those untouchables that we need not dwell with it? Bearing in mind, of course, that we must be taught within the context of the tradition and the history, the actual history of this thing. Naturally, any word in vernacular would actually clear perhaps some of the confusion that is there. What is the traditional prime minister in Sizulu, for instance? Perhaps it will. Then the last point, Chair. this question of involvement, or rather politics, I mean, let me put it that way, let me just say politics, the various, we know various political parties in the country have got various stances on matters, and one may even, when hearing a language, be tempted to say, well, perhaps the House is actually articulating a certain stance, something like that. What is the view of the House on the role of traditional leaders in party politics? You could say in this context, even the monarchy, even the houses by extension, those institutions. If you could share with us, I think it would clear certain other perceptions that may exist around this submission. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson.
Sorry, Chairperson.
Oh.
Chairperson, thank you very much. I want to echo the sentiments of my comrade and ghost next to me in thanking the presenter for the presentation. Chairperson, I had this question, the first of all the questions I had would be to get a brief outline of this new attitude that the House should adopt towards traditional leadership. If it could be spelled out, not in many sentences, just to give us an insight into it. I am saying this in the backdrop of the question I raised yesterday about autonomy. What do we mean by this autonomy? This concept springs up time and again. Autonomy. And I'm sure sessions of this nature seek to delve into that. What type of autonomy are we talking about? The other question, Comrade Chair, is in relation to what Ingos next to me has asked. I was confused when the presentation spoke about a prime minister within the traditional setup. Now I thought Amakosi, present here, will assist us. We were talking about traditional chairpersons, we were talking about all other sets of structures. Here comes now a prime minister. What does it say now to the entire intention that we are trying to be formulating within the traditional framework? Is the prime minister equal to the chairperson of a council or whatever? I'm sure we need to be enlightened on that. The other question, chairperson, I'm sure I'm belaboring it once again. There is this, or I might have misunderstood yesterday and this morning. The framework of traditional leadership, where should it be crafted and legislated, the framework? Is it national? Is it provincial? Is it local? We understand the diversity that is involved in the traditional setup. We understand that what obtains in the Western Cape doesn't in Mpumalanga. And therefore, one would want to understand, Ukuti, where exactly will it be appropriate for legislation to be enacted for it to operate?
Let me answer the last question. And then Ngonegeza Ngotnavu. The parliament is the supreme law-making body in the country. But Ngozi Buthelezi's presentation says he prefers that you stick your nose out of it and leave it to the provinces on this matter. No, he's answered you. So the president prefers that. So he's given his opinion, that is the opinion.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. Although I'm getting into the books, of a well experience in Kosi, I will try my level best. The first question that I will try to address is the issue of where the Framework Act is to be crafted. As the Honorable Chairperson has said, The national legislation is the supreme lawmaking body. No doubt about that. But when a law is made or is formulated, it must be informed by the views of the grassroots. In this case, when this bill was piloted, there has never been a consultation with the traditional leadership structures. In fact, the submission to Parliament was made before even the department could consult us. The bill was submitted to Parliament on the 4th of June, and there were consultations during the 20th, during the week of the 20th of June, when the bill was already in Parliament. So there has never been a consultation whatsoever. So it's not the views of the traditional leaders. It is the views of the department. The other question is the issue of traditional leadership being unfairly treated, as well as the autonomy. With due respect, Honorable Chairperson, I'm one person also who feels that the institution is not fairly treated as compared to all other sectors of our society. The institution is not fairly treated socially, economically, and otherwise. It does not have the respect it deserves to have, if we really understand what is Ubukhosi. If you go to our areas, you can see the well-being of Amakhosi that is very, 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 very in a low standard. It's only the kings that are well-treated in this country, not Amakhosi. You only survive by being a member of parliament, or you only survive by being a public servant, or only survive by being a civil servant. But if you're just an ordinary Nkosi sitting at home with no other work or income, you are one of the poorest. That is why they always say we're not fairly treated. When it comes to the issue of the autonomy with regard to houses, what you are saying with this autonomy, I will talk about especially the National House. The National House does not regulate its activities. Our activities are regulated by the department. Budget is dictated by the department. It is not informed of us, which I think it should be versus. It should be informed of what are our requirements. In terms of staffing, we have got no say to the staff members. The staff members are administered by the DPMG. Resources, we are only depending on the DPMG. In other words, we are just an appendage of the DPMG. We have got no free will whatsoever in our activities. Even if a member or a chairperson is to go and attend an international event, he cannot inform the house and say, here's an invitation, I have to go to this, and then the house give mandate to the particular exercise. He has to write motivations and inform the office of the minister as to why are you undertaking the trip, what benefits, and all those things. There's no freedom. Even members, if they are to undertake some trips, even local, you have to motivate as to why you are to go there. So this is the kind of autonomy I'm referring to. Our operations are not free. They are still subjected to particular endorsement. And also another issue that has been raised here is, what is the view of the Provincial House of KwaZulu with regard to the involvement of traditional leaders in politics? I think in this country, in Chapter 2 of the Principal Act, there is one right which says everybody has got a choice, freedom of choice. I think as long as your choice does not have any interference in the operations of the House, it is up to you to decide whether you want to participate in politics or not. I think that is an individual choice. I cannot labor much on that one. But everybody in this country has got the right to vote. The fact that you go to vote on a particular voting day, it means you support a certain particular party. Because you vote for a party, you don't vote for an individual. Therefore, you cannot divorce politics from your social life. The issue of traditional prime minister. Well, in this one, KwaZulu-Natal is peculiar from its history. The issue of a prime minister has been there, time immemorial. I remember under King Kejwayo, one prime minister was Gotite Gandlela Kasompisi, who was the prime minister of the king. Therefore, prime ministers in KwaZulu have been there from time immemorial. We cannot do away with that. All the kings have been having prime ministers, and fortunately and unfortunately, our chairperson of the house in the KZN is the prime minister of the king. So maybe is this English terminology you say is prime minister. When we talk about prime minister here, we're talking about Induna Enkulu Yesilo. As also I, as Inkosi Mavundla, have my own Induna Enkulu yakwaMthimunye. That is the prime minister of KwaMthimunye. If it's in the royal family, we say it's the prime minister of Isilo, Induna Enkulu Yesilo. Therefore, I think that will clarify the mist that is here. And then also another issue that has been also in the very same issue of the prime minister. What we advocated for in the province when the provincial constitution was being made, we were saying as a house, we need to have four hierarchies. We need to have a king in Gonyama in Lavugazi, and also the prime minister. Then other prime ministers should be senior traditional leaders and headmen. So there was this omission of the prime minister. That is why I was saying it does not recognize, the bill does not recognize all hierarchies. The other question was, how does our monarchy differ from other monarchies? Well, that question has been labored very much in this house, even yesterday, that provinces have got peculiarities. So we, as KwaZulu-Natal, we may be different from the province of Mpumalanga, we may be different from the province of Eastern Cape. So in KwaZulu-Natal, we have been having kings long time ago. In other provinces, they have been having paramount chiefs, who were later elevated into kingship. Therefore, I'm sorry to say that. thank you. the other issue is about these foreign ideologies. What are those foreign ideologies? Well, we cannot deny the fact that our principal law, some of the sections of our principal law, are a little bit too Eurocentric. Eurocentrism is playing a role in our traditional affairs, in that sometimes when laws or legislations are formulated, there's a lot of copying from the West instead of making a comparative education or study with the Africa states. The way UBCOS is being looked at, the comparison is made with the West much than the Africa states. If you look at the criminal justice system, in our country as compared to Botswana, you'll see that Ubukhosi is deprived of its role in issues of justice in traditional courts, in that much is put on the common law and the magistrate's courts, and Amakosa deprives the right to deal with some of the minor criminal cases. Much is more on the common and formal courts and the common law, if I may just make that example. I hope I've tried to answer some of these questions, but maybe my chairperson is going to answer it more, much more better than myself.
Okay, I just want to make one correct one statement from Nkosi Mavundla. I think it just touches on me that other places never had kings. They had paramounts that were just elevated. I think even the very same king, Yakwazulu, was viewed as a paramountcy because they looked at the 12 existing paramountcies, of which he was one of them, you know, and in all our areas, we've always known our kings as our kings, not as paramountcies, but they've always been referred to as paramountcies by what was written by the colonialists. So I think that is an unfortunate statement. There's an issue around the prime ministers. Maybe I think it's this word of a traditional prime minister. Because even in our monarchies, we do have ikosana or induna that represents ubukhosi, and in most cases is above any other headman and senior traditional leaders. Each and every issue that is brought to the king, he is the one that would handle all those, and those issues only go to the king if he feels he has not attended to them properly. And I think it has been a problem even now in Mpumalanga with the payment of headmen, because each and every headman that has to be paid has to be aligned to an area. So, and those induna, as you refer them in Zulu, amakosana, as in our areas, in most cases they are not paid because they would say, but you know, which area is it responsible for? So why do you need that person? But it's a person that has always been there, and I think even now that person continues to be there, even though he operates without any income. I think maybe on the issue of politics, I would prefer, but that's my own preference, and I think it's also a preference of other traditional leaders. If you look at the tone of the submission, it is because of the political infighting that had been there. So he's expressing his anger. That is not only from Ukosi Pet, but it's anger that comes from intermingling issues with politics and the traditional leadership. In movies, it becomes difficult to see whether, you know, this thing does it, is it raising it on behalf of Ukosi, or is it raising it on behalf of the party? It creates a bit of a problem. So if I would have to say something around this, I would prefer that Ukosi not to be part of politics, because I think this is what is killing the institution. You know, even though there are good things that are here, but people would always look at this on a negative light in terms of which political party one is under. And one would say this is, because if you talk of the negotiations that were there with the interim constitutions and all those, even though they were articulated for traditional leaders, but sometimes you find that point was raised by a political party. And if it was raised by a political party, then it sometimes creates problem. And that view is seen as a political party view. So I would it's not a stance, but one would say that Mlambo, of course, should be above politics and accept all political parties as abantwana bakho, because as in Ngozi, everybody, Tinagiti Ngozi, but to Ubabethu, And everybody says that. And you welcome every political party that would come to our area, and you know, so that we try not to be seen to be partisan. That would be my take on the issue. Thanks.
No, Chairperson, I want to correct the last expressions of my Honorable Nkosi. We must look at the reality here. We must play the ball, not the man. When a person is articulating himself, what is important is the content of the sentiment. We must not look at a person as per se. Don't judge a book by its cover. Look at the content. You see the problem with the Honorable Chairperson of Wazul. People don't look at what he is conveying. They look at him as the president of a political party. That's a problem.
Thank you, Chef. Thank you very much, Cosmo Kunda, for your responses. That's arising from your responses, purely on your responses, which I really appreciate very much. Now, on the question of, I think, politics, all I wanted to convey was, if Nonkonyana speaks as a member of the ANC, and it should not appear to any other party that he is now articulating the ANC. That was the implicit. You can say on Mukosi, because Mukosi is like, for instance, let's say a bishop. You see, when a bishop is actually at a political stand, then he diminishes, how can I put it, that status. You see, it wasn't that way, but I think he has already said, I don't need you to clarify on that. I just wanted to put in context so that I'm not misunderstood. But the one thing that I wanted clarity on you, which is confusing me now, on the traditional premier, when you came to Obon Banyashula, I understood. But when you say it is now a fourth layer of traditional leadership, that's where I have got a problem. Then this traditional premier, you said it must be a prime minister here. Then it's also a layer. Clearly, it's no longer an Induna of. It's an institution. It's institutionalized, as you put it. So, who will compose this structure? Because I understood an Induna is a mouthpiece and a servant of you in your level, of a king at that level. Now that he is sort of detached, or be it there is that connection which you say there must be. You said he must actually clear certain other things and take certain other things to you. Of course, the Mpumalanga also seems to understand you, but I don't understand you. Please, can you just clear only this matter, that it is another fear structure.
Also on the role of Prime Minister, would the Prime Minister have functions to rule against the King? It has happened in the past where the current Prime Minister the rule against the current king. We know the history, we know the accession to the throne after Mtoyizen, we know that history before Mtoyizen, and where the king, the prime minister, was acting independently of the king. Now, will that also be brought into this prime ministership, where at some stage we'll have that power to even rule against or act against the king? Just it's only was searching for clarity on that point as well.
Chairperson, let me, with due respect, reserve my comments, because this is about the reality. I don't have that mandate.
Okay.
I will allow Nkosi Mahlangu to finish responding to the questions that were outstanding, and then I'll request Nkosi Kwatis to present on behalf of Contralesa. And then the National House will speak. Having done so, we will then give Professor Sobahle to do the homework that we gave him yesterday, his preliminary responses to the issues here. Just to say to all of you members, the committee will then meet briefly to, in the absence of every one of our visitors, to discuss on our own how we take the process forward and to agree on the, we'll just make a proposal for the program to how we are going to, what is the language of the committee? To deliberate. Yes, to deliberate on what we have yet, and also therefore how we are going to proceed things. Yesterday when we spoke about people who were present here, the office of the presidency was here, but it was shy to tell us that it is here. We don't understand why, so we found out that they were here. These two ladies sitting there are from the office of the presidency, which expressed interest because it worked with the department on this matter. It's a matter that they have an interest in. Next time we'll teach them protocol. They must announce themselves to the chairperson that they are in the house representing that office. They must not sit quietly there. I actually thought that they were part of Ngosi Mahlangu and the National House traditional entourage. yes, so, but otherwise, thanks. Okay, Bob, go ahead.
Thanks, Honorable Chair. I will go straight to the issue that I was talking around discipline. Which was the question that was raised, that if we're saying that in terms of disciplinary measures that are supposed to be happening there, the king should be the one that relays the outcomes of whatever process to the president, doesn't that exclude the premier? In our view, kingship in most cases, I think it goes beyond provinces in most cases. You find that some kings, they have senior traditional leaders in other provinces that are not necessarily their own provinces, and in most cases, there's even this assertion that is being put by other provinces that would say a king should not necessarily have a territory, and would say you as a king, you are responsible for village A, B, C, and D. But you're responsible for senior traditional leaders that are within your community. So, and you find that those people are spread throughout the country. And one would say, you know, what premier should do, should express that. If maybe you are a king, that is recognized in Mpumalanga. But you've got other senior traditional leaders in other provinces, you know, how do you deal with that? What we're saying is that king should be the one that relays the information to the president. Because the way it was put, it was putting the responsibility solely on the premier. If maybe, you know, the committee or other members would say, you know, maybe we're excluding the premier, then maybe together, if it affects the premier's province, they could do it, but the king should not be excluded. We feel that as the responsible person for that kingship concern, he should be the one that you know, that takes responsibility for what is happening in the council, rather than the premier being the one that takes the flag. But if we agree that it should be both of them, maybe we could look at that. You know, so we were just talking around the issue, feeling that this is being left behind. On the issue of
before he passes that quick one quickly, if the king himself, because kingship here includes the king, they say the king has committed an act of misconduct, what will happen?
I think if he has created an act of misconduct, I think that information, even though it does not, I mean, we all have chairpersons, you know, in every structure, and there is always a process that would be followed. Maybe there would be a person that would then report, maybe, you know, that to the president, or but I think it should be directed to the president. You know, the king should also be disciplined, but you know, it should follow the processes that have been agreed upon by that structure.
Is it possible also in your discourse now to give us guidelines on what disciplinary measures are envisaged in this situation, so that
that's not part of it? That's a different character.
Or, okay.
Well, that's a substance of whether you want to hang it or try it. That's a different, that we have gone beyond that character. That's usually how succession was planned. It's extreme differences.
Thanks. When one moves to the issue of ex officio, I do understand that maybe that term was taken or was used because there are certain limitations that are supposed to be there. But these limitations are not spelled out. We do not necessarily know, you know, when we're talking of limitations, what are we talking about? Because people make their own interpretations of what ex officio means. And I think if we could have a proper, yes, what is intended. Because if you're saying we are creating a structure, because there was a structure that was there before, but we're saying we are transforming the structure. And we are, if we are transforming the structure, we're not, you know, if we're saying there will be limitations, I mean, we need to be clear. And also, if there could be another word that could be used, that would be understandable to everybody. Then, you know, because I think it has created, you know, quite a lot of discomfort.
Can I just make one quick example? I don't want to talk about usually in ordinary structure, people who are in higher structure become ex officio members of lower structure. So they provide general guidance, but they don't themselves get involved.
No, thanks. I think just to add one fact on that issue is, I think for kings, that's their only government. You know, so that's their only structure that they gathered through, and it would have, you know, limitations, and would say they can't do this. They can't. You know, it needs to be clear. You know, on.
Chairperson, I'm throwing this question. We're talking here about traditional leadership. And at which point, I think the sentiment is saying nothing about us without us. What about us? At which stage are the traditional communities talking the same language as you do? Because I think Inkosi will understand, but at one point, it's the traditional community that would stand out and say, we stand by our Inkosi. This is what should happen. All what is happening, Chairperson, is that the leaders are talking about themselves and nothing about us as commoners. Where are we getting involved in the ladder?
Thanks, Chair. I think we with the current way of how things are happening, within that, you know, you need to comment within 21 days and what have you, I think sometimes it makes it a bit difficult for us to go back and get comments. But I think the process that the parliament would normally open up and say anybody can come and comment, I think you as commoners, you are talking on our behalf, and I would believe that you know so we are covered. Thanks, Chair. In light of, I think there was something that was raised by the chairperson around local government, that, you know, all the spheres are interdependent and interrelated, and they are seen as equal. I think, you know, when we made the realignment statement, it's in light of, you know, the problems that have been experienced on the grassroots with your councillors and all those, the infightings that were there. So you'd always find that people feel that, you know, you have a councillor that has just come, that came in, and that just disregards you, and you have a minister that would respect you, but a councillor that would be on the ground has utter, you know, disrespect. And hence we've heard that maybe if you could have kings, you know, dealing on a certain level, you know, maybe that would assist. But not that we are undermining that structure. We think it's an important structure, and the structure that we need to work with. Around the issue that was raised by Nkosi Nonkonyane on the commission that spoke in the light of the results that were pronounced by the commission, and that, you know, is it not correct maybe that the kingship is aligned to a nation, not necessarily to a specific person. I think one would have a different view on that. In that when the pronouncements and what the process that was followed, it was okay. Okay.
Amounts to a dissolution. So the question was, and I added, we're looking at the, if you find that someone was put in there wrongly as a traditional leader, the question is, there were provisions that were made there that says there shall be this kind of decision that we agree to dissolve. This is what you're objecting to. So his question was, in the event, such as, for example, the Ntlapo Commission says that, and there's agreement about it, that this is not legitimate, so it must not proceed. This is the question that we were raising. We want you to respond to that one here.
Okay, I think our difference was that it should not necessarily depend on other nationalities, you know, on who becomes king of that of that area. But in terms of dissolution, I mean, if people agreed initially and he had to prove that this person was king, suddenly they can't suddenly change tomorrow and say no, this person we feel that no, we need to mobilize, he's not king anymore. I think it would not sit well, because then we are repeating what was done in the past, where you had a kingship and that kingship was deposed off.
What we are asking is, what are you proposing? What is the response to that situation where it is found that this is not an illegitimate system, it was an imposition from the past. So we want to correct the past mistake. So we are asking you, what mechanism are you saying we should use if you don't agree with the one proposed in the bill?
Okay. All right.
Because we assume that you agree that there were those problems before.
Mm-hmm.
That your brother was installed illegitimately. I'm being sensitively. Yeah.
Okay.
You know what I'm talking about?
All right.
Or someone else, not even your brother, was put in your place because your family, the correct house, was seen to be too full of agitation inside. So they're not
okay.
So someone
right.
from another family was pushing that now you want to restore
okay.
to the right people.
All right. I think a system that has been put there, I think what we might differ on is the one that would call outsiders to come and decide. But if senior traditional leaders within that community, they would say this was not the case, then they can dissolve that traditional leader, that kingship.
We need a formulation that will speak that language that you are agreeing to, because that's
okay.
what we are looking for here. Yeah.
And that will solve a Mubango issue.
Chairperson, to add just a rider to your sentiments, one other proposal that one may put forward is that in all the houses, we must be accorded an opportunity to have our own researchers, local houses, provincial houses, up to national level. Researchers that can go out within the house and research information about the particular traditional leadership position and bring the researched information to the house for the institution now to sit down and deliberate on the findings. It is another approach that one could propose. And also, again, I want to echo the sentiments expressed by the member of the portfolio here about the consultation with the communities. One of the reasons why we are advocating for autonomy, especially when it comes to issues of budget, is to have accessibility to our own budget so that we can be in a position to call our communities into one place and communicate or disseminate information as it is supposed to be. Because currently it's very difficult for our communities to go into a central place. In order for Nkosi to communicate with his tribe, you have to go word by word, because people cannot afford financial means of transporting themselves into a rural household. It's unlike the government, where it is possible to bus people into a central area. So we need that particular autonomy so that we can look after our people. Then consultations in our institutions will be possible.
Yeah, you see, Unkosi Mahlangu introduces a version that I thought this is the problem of globalization. If he wants to extend the jurisdiction, including to those who are in the diaspora.
Yeah.
Can you imagine the budgetary implications of that?
Okay.
obliges parliament or government to set up houses of traditional leaders. In the current constitution, you'll find that the government of the day is given the right to decide whether or not to set up houses of traditional leaders, because the operative word there is that is made. And we don't accept that, because it puts the continued existence of this house at risk and at the whim of political leaders of the time. Also, the relevant bills that need the attention of traditional leaders through the House. It's important that enough time be given to the houses of traditional leaders to delay the passage of such laws until the necessary consultation has been conducted, that is within the ranks of traditional leaders and also within the ranks of the communities that will lead themselves. The houses must be made to be integral features of the legislatures of the land, both physically and in practical terms. Here we do not understand why it is that in free South Africa, free from colonialism and apartheid, the institution that was the epitome of our governance before colonialism is not being made an integral part of the government of the country, particularly parliament. In other countries whose systems of governance we tend to emulate, seeing them as democracies, particularly Britain, we have the House, we have Parliament. This is made up of the House of Commons. People are elected by the electorate, and then the House of Lords. Take your pardon? Yes, people like those. even though we know that there are now and again noises from particularly the Labour Party, that the House of Lords must be done away with or diminished, but the people of Britain will never countenance a situation where they will have a parliament that doesn't have the Lords as part of the lawmakers. So at the same time, we're saying the houses must be autonomous bodies in the same way as legislatures and not be subjected to control by ministries. They must have power to adopt their own budgets and be able to hire their own staff. I know that the legislators, including this one, does not account to any minister, as far as I understand. And we see no reason, therefore, that the houses, which we see as also legislative bodies, that they be subjected to control by ministers and departments. They can be assisted wherever necessary, but I think they should not be controlled by ministers, for the same reason that I said that politicians do have their own agendas, which do not necessarily at all times coincide with those of traditional leaders and the people they lead. Members of the houses must be deployed on a full-time basis so as to be able to dedicate their time to the work of the houses during their term of office. Provision should be made for members of the houses to appoint deputies to act on their behalf while they are away on house business. Such deputies should be paid the salaries and benefits that would be due to the house members. No politician, therefore, including the president or a premier, should be given the right to decide who should be full-time and who should not, as the bill suggests. And now, members of the houses should, as a matter of course, be accorded the same rights, powers, privileges, and benefits that are due to their political counterparts. They must have cards like we have as members of parliament. They have medical aid. They must have pension benefits. They must have, like I say, all the amenities that are necessary for a political leader to do his or her work. By making such laws as this one, our government admits and confirms that the institution of traditional leadership is a system of leadership whose unique features and attributes render it complementary to the received forms of democracy as epitomized by elected political leadership. People will ask, but why would you want to have the same rights and privileges and benefits and powers as elected people, because they're not elected? But saying therefore, the very fact that we're sitting here today looking at this law means that our government accepts that in spite of us not being subjected to election, we are leaders in our own right as traditional leaders, and therefore there's no reason why Sibas Ben and Mababa and Gaz Mababa and Don Gizmis. But why are we holding back instead of according us what is due to us? So that you can make the contribution that is necessary to strengthen our democracy. South Africa is a country made up of a number of historical African kingdoms, which have managed to survive colonial and apartheid onslaught. Our monarchs must be accorded treatment that is commensurate to the status that they have in the eyes of their people. Accordingly, the monarchs must have the right to participate in any and all of the structures that have been set up by government for the benefit of traditional leaders. This right they can exercise either in person or through representatives, with a view to ensuring the use of institutions to promote national unity and cohesion. Traditional leaders of the same rank must be accorded similar treatment without regard to the ethnic groups from which they come. Yet again, we make the point as Condoleezza that it's important that there should be no perception of discrimination against some or other of the traditional leaders. If you are a king, you should be accorded the same rights that other kings enjoy. If you are a senior traditional leader, similarly. If you are a junior traditional leader, a term that we think we prefer to the other one called headman and things like that when using English. So all of those people must be given the same treatment so that they use their attributes to promote cohesiveness and national unity. While we know that we come from different tribal groupings and as such, we take our identity from them, but in the course of us creating a new nation, this institution must be used in order to emphasize more the commonalities than the differences that we may have. The institution is structured in such a manner that there are three main rungs in its hierarchy, namely the king, the senior traditional leader, in my language, inkosi, and the junior traditional leader, inkosana, what are termed in the current legislation, headman. All of them must be eligible to become members of the houses. We oppose, as Condoleezza, the idea that junior traditional leaders must be excluded from being members of the National House. We, in fact, go to the extent of supporting the participation of princes and princesses in the work of all structures of traditional leadership, even if they are not rulers of their clans. The leadership skills and expertise they possess can only enhance the quality of the work of the houses. I know, here again, Chair, as I indicated earlier, that within our ranks, there are traditional leaders who tend to undermine those who are considered to be of a rank lower than theirs. And we as Condoleezza are working for the unity of the institution as a whole. And the promotion of the dignity of the institution. We believe that all traditional leaders, regardless of rank, if they have the necessary capacity and expertise, must be given the opportunity to represent others. Because after all, these are not tribal positions, but positions that are representative of the institution of traditional leadership. The process leading to the deployment of members of the houses must not be conducted by politicians, but by the Independent Electoral Commission, so as to protect the integrity of the membership of the houses and to avoid accusations of political manipulation and interference. The initial swearing in of the members of the houses must be conducted by the Chief Justice and the Judges President in respect of the National House and the Provincial and Local Houses, respectively. The deployment of members of the houses by the relevant electoral colleges from the traditional country level through to the provincial houses and in the National House must be conducted as far as is practicable through open discussion and consensus in line with the traditional way of conducting such business. Here we're saying that it's not desirable for traditional leaders' representatives to be deployed in the same way that politicians are. We will find that people will be campaigning and contesting for election to the various structures of traditional leadership. Would rather that traditional leaders sit down together in their relevant and various electoral colleges talk to each other about the merits and demerits of appointing so-and-so instead of so-and-so, so that there is not a convivial spirit rather than the spirit of competition amongst them. That's why I choose the word deployment rather than election, because elections tend, as I say, to be divisive. The terms of the houses need not deliberately and consciously be timed to coincide with those of the political structures of the state, such as local councils and legislatures. We would not like to see these houses getting embroiled in the fight that characterize election of politicians. You know, even us as traditional leaders, we do have our political preferences. Some of us are members of the ANC, others the Inkatha Freedom Party, others belong, maybe, if I'm not sure, to the DA, they could be. So you find that so we didn't like, therefore, that the atmosphere that prevails around the election campaigning would extend to the sphere of operation of traditional leaders. So these things must be done separately, so that when calm has returned to the country, when elections have been conducted, then can start looking at the matter of the construction of the houses of traditional leaders. Finally, the houses must have power to summon MECs and ministers to address them on any matters of relevance to the work that they perform. We know that, especially before elections, politicians will come to the great places in their numbers to express the fact that they call themselves subjects of traditional leaders, to come and account and do all sorts of things. That must continue on a regular basis. It must not be timed to coincide with election campaign periods and things like that. And if you allow me, Chair, can I quickly read through the other document? Traditional Leadership and Governance Framework Amendment Bill. I know that I've been speaking like sort of generally. You might even not understand that I was addressing myself specifically to the bill relating to the National House. Oh, that one came later, eh? Oh, I'm sorry. There is another one.
Sorry, I forgot to.
Logistical problems. We don't have facilities and control. We are an NGO. If I may continue, sir. Now, again, we welcome as Contralesa the amendment bill, as it seeks to improve the environment within which the institution of traditional leadership operates. We see such developments as the government's commitment to bring traditional leaders in from the cold of the new democratic order. For far too long, traditional leaders have been, as I said, subjected to all sorts of unbecoming control by government, which had no right to interfere in our affairs. Now, our interaction with the Department of Provincial and Local Government has taught us that it is always much more constructive if bills and policies affecting the institution are crafted in collaboration with us, the representatives of traditional leaders, before they are presented to government and parliament. This allows for a common understanding of the issues and protocols from early on. Traditional leadership is an institution which has a number of facets and nuances. It is not just about the individual personalities who occupy the seat of authority. While there are generally three rungs in the hierarchy of the institution, namely the king, senior traditional leader, and the junior traditional leader, there is also the rank of the subheadman. In my language, Zibainduna or Zibonda or not Tejana. This is a very important officer within the institution, without whom no traditional leader can be effective. He is the first door through which community members call whenever an issue arises. We call therefore on the community committee to seriously consider according the necessary official recognition to this level of traditional leadership, in the same way that it has created ward committees and community development workers for local governments. See, we in this democratic order have so many structures of government. We, without having considered seriously whether we don't have enough structures already in place, we do add more in order to ensure that those that we create are sufficient, are effective. As I say, we at the council level, we have ward councillors, naturally. But underneath them, we have ward committee members. And in addition to that, we have community development workers. All of those people, when you are in the rural areas where they are traditional leaders, you find that they become a duplication of the officials that are already there. You have the councillor doing his work. He's got his own committee members, in Dunazak, the ward committee members, and so on. On the other hand, you have the traditional leader with his own is in Duna. And then you find that there's conflict in the course of process. But then a decision has been taken that these structures must be set up. So we are saying, therefore, in the course of government giving recognition to the institution of traditional leadership, it must recognize the fact that we do have our own committee members in the form of these is in Duna, who we are asking that they be given the necessary recognition and support. We also support the recognition of the need for a structure to be set up for the conduct of the work of our king, that is the Kingship Council. But we want to make the comment that we do not understand the reasoning behind the choice of the word kingship as opposed to kingdom. It looks like an attempt to shy away from the reality that the Republic of South Africa is founded on the African kingdoms that have always been in existence since time immemorial. Our people, for instance, continue to refer to these places as the kingdoms of Temboland, where I come from, Kingdom of Zululand, Kingdom of Bandebele, Sekukuneland, Mpondoland, Kingdom of Kwaxhosa, and so on. So I think we do need to give recognition to that fact, even in terms of the law, by using the correct terminology. The Kingship Council must be made up of all the senior traditional leaders of the relevant kingdom. I see the bill says that there must be a certain number of members of the Kingship Council. But that would be not complete because we need the senior traditional leaders in their own right as the advisors, counselors to the king. So that Kingship Council would not be complete, therefore, if there would be a tribe that is not represented by its senior traditional leader in the council. These senior traditional leaders must be in addition to those that will be deployed through the traditional councils and those appointed by the monarch in terms of custom. Those deployed through traditional councils, we submit, should include the persons who represent vulnerable groups such as women, the disabled, and the aged. Urban representatives of the monarchs must also be appointed and take part in the work of the Kingship Council in order to strengthen the link between city dwellers and rural communities. See, there are many traditional leadership. It's not just about giving leadership to rural communities. We do give leadership to our people who also live in the urban area. In fact, on a regular basis, Contralesa is called to come and address and assist and advise African communities who reside in the urban area on matters affecting them in terms of their cultures and their religion. So I think, therefore, the Kingship Council should be made up also of people coming from those areas. Now the question of remuneration, because I imagine that the reason the number of senior traditional leaders to sit on the Kingship Council is limited is because of the fear that too much money will have to be expended on them. We are suggesting that these senior traditional leaders may not necessarily be remunerated except for traveling and subsistence expenses, unlike others who we believe must be fully remunerated. Yet again, as with respect to the houses of traditional leaders, the term of office of the Kingship Council must not be aligned with that of elected political leaders for the reasons I outlined earlier on, such as that this structure should not be exposed to a perception or accusations of manipulation by politicians. We oppose the disqualification of senior traditional leaders from becoming members of the Kingship Council on account of them being members of municipal councils, legislatures, and houses of traditional leaders. They must be allowed to participate, provided that, here again, they will not be remunerated except for unavoidable traveling and subsistence allowances. Some of us are members, as I said, of the parliament, and yet we continue to be leaders of our communities, even if we are not paid for acting as leaders, as traditional leaders. But we continue to render the service that is necessary. We attend the meetings that are convened by our kings and our monarchs in order to ensure that we do give the advices that is necessary, even if we are members of these houses. So we are saying, therefore, let us not break the chain that binds these various levels of traditional leadership merely because some of us happen to be deployed in other structures of government, such as municipal councils, legislatures, and the House of Traditional Leaders. The Kingship Council should have the power to mediate. Or there's a provision somewhere that says the Kingship Council, among other things they have to do, is to mediate in disputes involving senior traditional leaders. We are saying they should also mediate in disputes involving junior traditional leaders, where these have not been addressed at the lower level of traditional councils. Now, the establishment of the sub-traditional councils, if established at all, must be done with respect to all areas of rule of the junior traditional leader. As it is, all junior traditional leaders have committees who work with them on a regular basis. It will not be acceptable for some to have sub-councils while others do not. The chairperson of the sub-traditional council must of necessity be relevant to junior traditional leader. He need not be appointed by the traditional leader, the senior traditional leader. Here I'm saying that these sub-traditional councils, it's necessary for them to be established, as has been found by the department, ought to be established for all junior traditional leaders. Because in any event, they do have their structures, just that the government doesn't necessarily recognize them. But for them to be able to do their work, they have set up these sub-councils, but they are all part of the bigger traditional council. But then, therefore, this should be provided for all junior traditional leaders. And the chairperson of that sub-traditional council, there's no need for that chairperson to be appointed. He is already there, or she is already there, as a junior traditional leader. So that junior traditional leader must automatically be a member. Now, the amendment of this act affords Parliament also the opportunity to make sure that the traditional council include all junior traditional leaders, regardless of their number, within the area of jurisdiction of such councils, to the ex-official members of the council. The way some of these laws, I think also the provincial laws, couched is such that because of the limitation of the number of members of the council, some traditional, junior traditional council leaders tend to be excluded. And now you can't conceive of a situation where there would be a traditional council which doesn't have all the traditional leaders in that given area. In fact, some senior traditional leaders would, because they are not on good terms with the other junior traditional leaders, use the power they have to appoint people onto the council by excluding some junior traditional leaders. And that we are saying, therefore, we are saying all traditional leaders, including junior traditional leaders, must be automatic members of the traditional council to which they belong, regardless of the number. Now, the question of the remuneration of traditional leaders must, in the same manner as elected politicians, be regulated by law, with requisite benefits and allowances clearly spelled out, and not be dependent on the whims of political leaders. The matter of the remuneration of junior traditional leaders must be urgently finalized and standardized throughout South Africa. Now, I know that we spend a lot of time in Parliament, as members of Parliament, even in our caucuses, talking about our benefits and remuneration and so on. And yet there is a law that states what benefits we are supposed to be getting as members of parliament. Now, with traditional leaders, with respect to traditional leaders, we find that even though the law does say that we must be paid salaries, it doesn't go far enough. There's a provision that says the president will decide as to what other allowances and benefits should be extended to traditional leaders. And yet such a provision does not apply to politicians. We are saying, therefore, that should be done away with, that it must be the law that determines what benefits and allowances must be given to traditional leaders. And those benefits must be no less than those that are received by our political counterparts. Also, the question of the remuneration of junior traditional leaders, I think it's a matter that ought to be dealt with urgently, and I would request the committee to engage the government to ensure that this matter is finalized. The position currently is that while the salaries, the basic salaries of kings and senior traditional leaders are standardized, those of junior traditional leaders have not been. You find situations where in one province, junior traditional leaders getting different amounts in salaries, and that is not acceptable. And in other provinces, you find that they are not salaried, and yet they pay. I mean, they render a service. I understand, for instance, Cosma Funda, that in KwaZulu-Natal, Izinduna are not paid, the junior traditional leaders are not paid. That is not acceptable, because these people render a service. That was acceptable in the past, where traditional leaders as a whole were maintained by their subjects, by their people. Now that people are no longer required to pay levies to maintain their traditional leaders, and that people are paying taxes, therefore those traditional leaders giving that kind of service must be paid. The reconstruction, finally, of the traditional council establishments must be expedited. I know that you can't say that in terms of the law, this must be expedited, but seeing that we're talking about the traditional councils, I'm urging the committee again to get the department to ensure that these traditional council offices are established. This will facilitate the access by rural communities to all government services without the inconvenience of forcing them to go to town. We know that the act that we are amending makes provision for all departments of state to work hand in hand with traditional leaders. And one of the ways of ensuring that that work is done is by ensuring that the traditional council offices accommodate all government department offices to ensure that people can walk to get the services of the state instead of having to be forced to travel to town at a great expense. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you for the presentation. The presenter alluded to the British system of governance by saying there's the Queen, and although there are opposing voices, the Queen will remain the Queen or the King after the Queen. Now, that is one example of where there is joint rules, or if I use the term joint rule, within the legislature and the monarchy. But you also have other instances dotted all over Europe. You have Holland, you have Spain, you have Norway up the top there, that also have kings, but playing totally different roles from that of the United Kingdom. Was it possible then to give that example, those examples that are numerous instead of this particular one of the British one, so that one can see why was this particular one chosen, not to the others, in terms of difference? Just clarity on that point. Thank you, Chairperson.
Chairperson, with me is not a question, just a comment. With regard to the issue of the traditional council, I just want to bring to the attention of the Portfolio Committee the problems that this establishment of traditional cartels has arisen, especially in our province, as the first province that has established them. The quota or the percentage that is stipulated by the law, that of 60% versus 40% of the elected, has already created some problems in my province. In a tribe where you have 24 headmen, you are only able to put in your council 18, and the remaining 6 are outside the council. And the department has started to remunerate them on monthly basis. And now only this 18 is remunerated. The other 6 outside the council are not remunerated. I just want to bring this to your attention, because with the other provinces which are still trying to establish council, they must be aware of the problem. And then another proposal, Chairperson, with regard to the presentation here, is the advocacy by controllers that of junior traditional leaders being allowed to be members of the National House. I think on that one, you don't look alike as traditional leaders. I will propose that maybe before legislation is passed, this matter be discussed by all provinces in a seminar where all provinces will be represented, so that when the legislation is finalized, we are talking about one voice, because so far we're not talking about one voice.
Thank you, Chairperson. The first one would be, Chairperson, for the committee perhaps to understand the structure of the, I mean, the traditional leadership structure as proposed. If Inkosi can look into how this would be structured, it would assist, really. But the second question relates to the non-territorial tensions and disputes between traditional leadership and elected.
I didn't quite follow the first question.
No, I was saying it would assist Elizabeth Wuti, as traditional leaders, your proposal as to how this structure would look like, if you would put it in a form of a structure, it would assist us as the committee to understand. This is what comes first, this is what comes second, and all that. The institution, exactly. If it would be a structure or the organogram, it would assist us so that we can juxtapose it with the organogram of that particular sphere of governance. Now, I was trying to check now, on the question of Induna and their committees in one area, a councillor and its committees, operationally, how would they normalize their relations? I'm saying this, I'm asking this in the backdrop of previous tensions which led to what Inkosi from Mpumalanga said. The other one is that I heard you earlier talking about independent electoral commission, which meant that a certain level of the traditional institution would be subjected to elections, but a certain level lower to that would be appointed. How would that work? The deployment of members of houses by relevant electoral colleges. It means, therefore, that those at that level should be appointed and not be subjected to the earlier process of having an independent electoral commission? I think those are the questions, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Mine is to the Honorable Nkosi Holomisa with regard to the question of the members of the House, and also they're also requesting for the deputies also to be remunerated. So I just wanted to find out, is it not going to be duplicate where the members and the deputies are going to get the salaries working from the same house and having maybe a working relationship in that house? I just wanted to find out from there, is it not going to be a duplicate? And another one is with regard to the issue of the kingship council not to be aligned with not to be allowed with the political structure. It is also indicated here that they don't want that term to be aligned with that of the politics. So I just wanted to find out, are they also proposing that they have their own term of office, or do they want to have, not to align themselves with other structures of the government? Or I just want to find out from there if maybe another member could actually clarify me on that one. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Thank you to the honorable members, Nkosi Mapundla, for the comments and questions. Mr. Gogo, you want to know why do I choose only Britain and not the other European monarchies? Well, we're colonized only by Britain, or well, to some extent, Holland. So those are the people we're familiar with. But in any event, I was just making it, by the way, it's because we don't really want to be seen to legitimize our institutions by associating them with Europe, because our experiences as traditional leaders with Europe are very traumatic. It is us politicians, two heads, one beside the other here, who tend to want to legitimize our positions by looking at Canada, New Zealand, and even Britain and Europe. So we are different from Europe. But the point I'm making is that, in spite of what has happened before, colonial times, before colonial times, the institution of traditional leadership is still here. It continues to govern. In the rural areas, even if there were no councillors, no MPs, people will continue to be governed. It's just that the resources are no longer at the disposal of traditional leaders, that we are not able to give them what they need, but we are able to facilitate. So I'm saying, we should therefore not hold our hand. Professor Ndoni Mwababa, isn't it? We should go all out to give the recognition.
To be stingy.
Yeah, let us not be stingy about giving recognition to the institution of traditional leadership while saying they are leaders, and yet at the same time we are holding back on some of the resources that are necessary for them to operate properly. Nkosi Mavundla, that's exactly the point I was making in my opening remarks, that if the government, the department, had beforehand sat down with traditional leaders to iron out some of these differences that we have, it would not have been necessary for us to be contradicting each other. I know even within Kontalesa that there are traditional leaders, senior traditional leaders, who don't like junior traditional leaders, something I never understand. Wow. Can you not like your colleague? Because for you to succeed with your work, you have to have a junior traditional leader. But then the others feel that, well, this is a matter of status, that you cannot, as a senior traditional leader, be represented by a junior traditional leader. So those are the things that indeed maybe we want to flesh out amongst ourselves at some stage. Because I suppose those who oppose the participation of junior traditional leaders in other structures of traditional leaders, they have their own strong reasons for that. Well, fortunately, he agrees with me on the matter of the quotas that are given to membership to the councils, giving problems that you leave out some traditional leaders who are supposed to be inside. Well, it would be only too happy, Vulane, to give you a picture of what traditional leadership, that is, as a committee, a picture of what traditional leadership is like. We tend to assume when we come at this stage to speak to our leaders, political leaders, that they understand some of the things they are making laws on. But the truth is that indeed some of these things we don't understand them as much as we should. So if this committee were to facilitate a workshop, we would very much welcome that, Comrade Chair, so that we can explain these things. Because indeed some mistakes tend to be committed by us members of parliament because we don't have full insight and understanding of the environment that we are dealing with. The headman committee, yes, indeed, we've been saying as Contra Letter that the setting up of local government structures in our areas of rule without giving due recognition to the structures of traditional leadership is bound to give problems. There are going to be tensions and conflicts. Some councillors think, for instance, that they have the right to demarcate the plots and give people land, allocate pieces of land, and then when in fact they don't. It is the traditional leaders in their communities who have that right. Councillors are there to provide delivery of services, government services. If they need land, like everybody else who needs land for any project, they must approach the traditional leaders. Some people don't know that. They think they have come to replace traditional leaders. The only thing they have replaced traditional leaders with is the fact that the resources of the state are in their hands, but not the land. The land continues to belong to traditional leaders. Look at the Communal Land Rights Act, which give recognition to that fact. Now, as I was saying, we have these committees that are in existence, which are not getting any form of financial support from the state, which assist traditional leaders in carrying out their work, junior traditional leaders and even senior traditional leaders. And in addition to them, we have now the white committees that are given, supposed to be given money by the state in order to do their work, as well as the community development workers. When you look at them, looking at what they are supposed to be doing, you find that this is the work that our own officers and traditional leaders are doing. So why doesn't our government give our own officers the kind of money that is available to be given to what committee members? Because I know in the countries, indeed, there are no headmen there. There are no traditional leaders. So you need, as a councillor, to have those kinds of people to support you. But in the rural areas, this work that we are giving to committees is the work that is already being done by traditional leaders and their committees. So I'm saying, therefore, seeing that government is has set up these new structures in addition to the ones that exist, the ones that that have been in existence must be given the necessary support. The IEC involvement, as I'm saying, I'm not saying there must be no election of members of the various structures, that is the houses of traditional leaders and so on. But the preferred situation would be where people sit amongst themselves and talk. But if there is a need for elections, they must not be conducted under the auspices of ministers or MECs or any politician. They must be conducted under the auspices of an independent body, the IEC. Well, of course, there are others who are not elected, like traditional leaders are not supposed to be elected to councils, be it the traditional council or the sub-traditional council or the kingship council. At the sub-traditional council level, the junior leader, traditional leader, must be the chairperson. He can't be elected to that position. He's already there in terms of the custom of that particular community. The traditional council must be made up, firstly, of traditional leaders, the senior traditional leader and his junior traditional leader, and then the others who are appointed in terms of the relevant legislation. Similarly, at the kingship level, the senior traditional leaders must be automatic members of those structures. Now, as suggestion that I make, that when a traditional leader, for instance, a senior traditional leader who is the head of a traditional council, is deployed to a house of traditional leaders, where we say they must be full-time, and we are suggesting that there should be a deputy, isn't that going to cause some tension within the family? The traditional council is made up of junior traditional leaders, among others. So it should be possible for one of the junior traditional leaders to be appointed a deputy of the senior traditional leaders who have been deployed so that they can work. Now, government, in terms of the constitution, doesn't allow a one person to be paid salaries, more than one salary. Obviously, the bigger salary is the one, should be the one that is earned by a member of a house. So he will take that one. Now, the salary that was supposed to get as a traditional leader now must be given to the deputy who had taken over his responsibilities. That is the suggestion we're making. It could be one of the traditional leaders, or it could be a royal family member. That is the way they feel, but that option must be left open. Why do you oppose the alignment of the terms of office of these houses and councils with that of with those of politicians? I said, you know, the atmosphere that rages when elections to be held. Everybody gets affected by that. There are divisions. The DA will want to fight the ANC. The ANC will want to fight the IFP, and so on. And well, we nandi within the communities, so we coordinate the elections as campaign. So we don't want, therefore, that traditional leaders must be involved in that kind, caught up in that kind of atmosphere. These elections and campaigning for political positions must be conducted separately from those that require the deployment of traditional leaders, so that traditional leaders don't go there on the basis that they are ANC or TA or IFP to the houses that to which they are deployed. So that basically is the basis. See, traditional leaders as individuals, they are people supposed to unite different sections of their communities. So we need to extend that to the other level.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, most of the issues have been covered by my colleagues. Issues which were identified by the National House and some other structures who also submitted some submissions to the National House before we consolidate them into our position, of which I believe it was presented yesterday, part of the National House bill. It was presented, yes, part of it. Yes. So that, Chairperson, firstly, let me thank you for giving us this opportunity just to say, in rounding this debate, a few things which we have identified as the National House of Traditional Leaders. Firstly, Chairperson, our point of departure would be with the question of the definition of a traditional leader. A traditional leader itself, which is in this fashion using terminologies which are from outside, which are foreign to us, and wherein we are saying, as the National House of Traditional Leaders would see or would appreciate, maybe if we make use of our own terminologies. Terminologies like Inkosi, Kosi, Morena, and the like. Because we feel these terminologies give dignity to this institution than the word traditional leader as it is. alluded by so many documents and people. And one other thing, Chairperson, is that the definition of a traditional leader, you'll remember that in terms of this, of the Framework Act, it covers the question of a king or queen, the senior traditional leader, which is also foreign to us, which is also confusing people, and also the headman. And we feel as an institution that maybe if we use our own terminology, that will give something to, will restore the dignity of the institution. Chairperson, one other thing which we have also identified in the bill, or of course this has been captured even in the Act, the Principal Act, it is the question that gender sensitivity now has been covered. And now what we are looking for as traditional leaders is as to how are we going to implement this gender sensitivity, the gender issue. Because we are very much aware that in most of our communities outside there, the question of the institution is still patriarchal. And how are we going to patch all these other people to constitute that number which is wanted by the Act? It's another issue which I think people need to talk about. Because I'm looking at a number of provinces in this country where there are very, very, very few women traditional leaders. And in fact, most of them are acting on behalf of their children or sons. So that is another dimension which we are looking for, forward to, as to how are we going to implement such dynamics. Then there is the question of the kings. The question of kings, it has been our wish, Chairperson, that a council of chiefs needs to be constituted and needs to be included in the Act. And we are happy that it is there now. How this whole question is going to be addressed, I think, as I said, most of the structures here, you know, indicated as to how they feel it should be captured. And our position, we also put clear here early this morning that we would wish that, want that all traditional leaders would belong to one king should be part, all senior traditional leaders, I'm repeating, all senior traditional leaders who are part of a certain king must be part of that council because they represent their own areas individually. And I think this Contralesa also alluded to this position. The other question which I have noted, Chairperson, it is about the autonomy of the houses of traditional leaders. I'm coming back to this one. I know it was addressed yesterday, but I think it is important to re-emphasize our position on it. That we feel that the National House, as well as the provincial houses, they must have a certain leverage of autonomy. They need to be given that type of an autonomy. How is something maybe which we need to engage ourselves in. But we are saying maybe if we adopt the autonomy given to Chapter 9 institutions, that will be something. Because Chapter 9 institutions are able to do whatever they do. They have to do their own budgeting and all those other things. Now, with the National House, we can't, you remember, Chairperson, that we can't even do that. It is something which the department is doing. When it comes to the question of the officials, as it was alluded, it is for the department and all those other things. And we are saying, we are praying to this committee to say,
maybe it will be good in order for the smooth running of the National House if you allow us a certain type of autonomy. And we're recommending that one of the Chapter 9, which is something we can't recommend something which is more than that, because that will mean that the House will be moving completely out of government. Now, we want to be part of government, but with that type of autonomy, where we are able to decide to employ our own people and all those, and be accountable to you, wherein we will be able to articulate our budget ourselves. The other thing, Chairperson, which we have noted, it is the question of the linking the houses, the term of office of all the houses with those of political structures like parliament or whatever. We are saying the institution of traditional leadership is here. Whether parliament is there, whether it is a military coup, is a what, the institution of traditional leadership will always be there. So the reason why we are saying it is not necessary for the houses to align their term of office with any political structure. And we are saying, we have noted something in, I think it is under the dissolution of the House, where the department is suggesting that the House can just decide to dissolve itself. We have never seen that type of a situation where the structure dissolves itself. It is something which I think the committee needed to look into, that the section which is talking about that, the dissolution of the House, should be reviewed, and the House must be allowed itself to dissolve as its term expires. And some other reasons were given why we should not link align ourselves with the Contra Lesa and other structures. And one important issue which I like, Chairperson, is that the legislation allows peculiarities to exist in COVID. And we appreciate that, and we say that must continue. It must continue. Because you remember early this morning we had some talk about the question of the inner circle and all those other things. That will be captured by the provincial legislation and not by the national legislation. And one other thing which affected both the bills, that is the National House Act as well as the Framework Act of bill, it is the code of conduct. We are saying when it comes to the code of conduct, even the one which is in existence now, traditional leaders were never consulted on that one. And we are saying traditional leaders need to be given an opportunity to craft their own document, which they will be able to talk to it themselves. It should not be crafted by somebody who has sat somewhere else understanding the things himself. We are saying if that is to happen, then it must be done together with traditional leaders. And one other thing which we were dodging all along as traditional leaders, we don't even want to talk about it, that is the question of party politics. Our view is that we need to look into that question as traditional leaders, because this question of us participating in party politics, it is dividing our community. And community by communities here, Chairperson, I'm not talking about a community of Kutama. I'm talking about the whole community in South Africa, because they belong to traditional leaders in one way or the other. So for us to unite this nation, we must be seen to be away from party politics. This is one important thing which I had thought maybe the bill will cover it and make sure that indeed we do. We no longer have traditional leaders who are participating in party politics. And in order to address this, Chairperson, it is important now for us to amend the Constitution, because the content of the Constitution gives traditional leaders now to play those roles. So I think it is important for us. If we want to exclude traditional leaders in party politics, then let's go back and amend the Constitution so that we stop them from there. And that will also make sure that the issue we are talking about, not aligning our structures with those of political parties, will be confirmed by those things. Because once you do that, you are saying this structure, these people no longer participate in party politics, and they concentrate in development, advancement of their cultures, what and all of their communities. These are some of the issues, Chairperson, we have noted. Now, there is this question of when a king has committed an offense. Our position there would be that maybe we need to allow a space for traditional leaders to talk about this. But in the meanwhile, I think what we can do maybe is to put a structure, say a tribunal, something like that, to look into such things. We think maybe that one will assist. And there were other issues which I think there were errors which happened in the Act. I think like in Section 4B, where it is written sub-traditional council instead of traditional sub-council. So all those things need to be corrected by the our technocrats. Now, one other thing, Chairperson, it is the question of the hierarchy of the institution. The kings, the senior traditional leaders, and the headmen, and even their participation in various structures of traditional leaders. Now, this question is something which I think as an institution, various institutions in the country, we need to come and face it head on. Because I can see that it will see people tend to avoid it and to run away from it. We need to attend to this question to say who is supposed to attend to this structure, and who is supposed to be in this structure, and who is supposed to be in this structure. I'm saying this, Chairperson, because sometimes when you create structures, you also look into the protocol of that institution. So whenever, say for example, you allow headmen to be part of the National House, and one of the headmen becomes the Chairperson of that National House, how are the people going to view the whole thing when it comes to the question of protocol? And the headman is there controlling traditional leaders, and the kings, say for example, the kings are there. Are we saying that will be something we would want to see happening? I'm just posing this, Chairperson, and say maybe traditional leaders themselves need to interact seriously about this. We need to engage ourselves if we want to be realistic. Because some of these issues, really, I don't see them happening practically. Because even myself, in my area, where the headmen are people who were put there by an inquiry, they turn now and become somebody who must... So I don't see some of these things happening. We fully agree with the sentiment that headmen, they assist the traditional leaders, and they must all also receive benefits and whatever other structures are getting. But when it comes to the protocol, I think we need to observe that seriously. Thank you, Chairperson.
Number 10. Thank you, Chairperson, Honorable Chairperson, and Honorable Members, General Public at large, for this opportunity to respond to some of the comments made largely on the National House of Tasmania's bill. First of all, Chairperson and members, allow me to say this, that we are pleased to listen to some of the comments which by and large are not a radical departure from what the government had proposed, but some of the amendments. We appreciate that. And it also shows that we have not departed from what Amakosi would like to see in this field that concerns them so much. Thirdly, Chairperson, so you may I state that what we are going to present here is a rationale, not really a defense of what we said. The rationale, the reason behind what we said. That's all. And so that you're going to see that in some instances we are not married to what we said. We provide why we said what we said. I hope I'm going to be allowed to address the issues sometimes as they were presented by the provinces, by people, sometimes not in that chronological order, Chairperson. But we're going to hope that myself and my colleagues, especially who my colleague Temba, will come in, as well as my colleague here, Fani, will come in again where it is necessary for them to expatiate and give more clarity on some of these things. Definitions. There was an amendment or a presentation on that, and we are saying when it comes to definitions, I think it came from Umalanga presentation, that on the issue of oath and affirmation, we didn't provide a definition there because it's already dealt with in Clause 22. And also, reference is made to that in Schedule B, and we feel that that is adequate. Concerning, for instance, the House committees, again, and we're saying it's not necessary to define that. As Clause 20, the Act provides for this, and provides, and it goes on to say that this matter will be dealt with under rules and orders of the House. We felt that was necessary, that was clear. The same applies to the President. I mean, who does know the President? And no, there can be no misinterpretation of that, what we mean by the President should do this, for us to define that. I am going to, with your permission, Chairperson, finish the issues that I can address, then allow my other colleagues, especially Temba Fosi, Mr. Fosi, to address especially the issue of autonomy, that he will address that. We concede, for instance, on the issue of the chairperson and the deputy chairperson,
we all know that they are full-time, and that should be spelled out in black and white. But we still maintain then that the issue of extending full membership or full, what do you call this, full-time participation of these people should still be left in the hands of the president. Of course, he can consult the leadership of the House, but it should be the president. Of course, he has to get the views of the concerned minister, in this instance, our minister, Honorable Minister Mufamadi.
In my meetings,
when you speak theoretically, I always insist that we must be gender sensitive. It's a very important part of the responsibility, so that even as we then proceed to write, that is reflected in what we are speaking about. So I just wanted to draw your attention to that as you proceed to speak.
Thank you, Chairperson. I accept that, and indeed it is very important for us to always reflect this.
I didn't want to say it when Ngozi Chikanwa speaking.
Apologies.
I'm scared of you. I'm not scared of you.
Apologies, ladies and gentlemen. And you must know this is a situation that I take very seriously. As a member of this government that upholds that, and also in my private way. So I'm sorry, I want to apologize for giving that impression. As I said, Chairperson, that this is the rationale linking, for instance, the terms of office of these houses with the local house. The rationale behind that was the fact that throughout the world, indeed within the Southern African part of the continent, the issue of the participation of traditional leadership in issues of in areas of governance and service delivery is at a low, or at a local government level, throughout. Even where there is an interaction by the National House with national departments, the issues are taken on the ground at the local level. That is where the institution, not caused by any government, but That's the reality of the situation, that they grapple with issues which are at the local level, on the ground at local level. So that was the rationale. Otherwise, we are not married to that. And this issue was considered by, I think, the presenter from Mpumalanga, Honorable Nkosi Mahlangu, to say it was largely influenced by consideration of prestige and status, not by practical issues, and that's what motivated us to come up with that. The composition of the House, as far as we are concerned, let us understand that the issue and the institution of traditional leadership is located in the provinces. Even the kings who have been elevated to level to enact with the president operate in the provinces. And so, as far as possible for political leadership, that is the president, it is unthinkable for the president to attend to those issues without interacting with the premier, the head of the province, the premier. The
premier can do the consultation. It's unthinkable for the kings to interact with the president without the knowledge of the premier. And so we this is how we see things, that the president will interact with the kings, but with the knowledge of the premier. When issues have to be conveyed to the president from the kings at the provincial level, the premier must be the bridge through which these things happen. That is our thinking when we bring in the minister and the premier to these issues. And so we sometimes taken aback when we hear that the minister may have may be allowed to bite more than he can chew, that he has wide powers. We don't agree with that, and we don't see it that way, because that is what motivates us. For instance, talking about the subsection 4, 5, and 6 the member from Mpumalanga was saying that one I'm just going to say this, that this is dealt with, you know, those issues. Mr. Chairperson, let us be very clear on this, that if we want to deal with issues that take place at the provincial level, let us be clear that this legislation is dealing with issues how the National House must do things at the national level. If there are concerns that may happen in dealing with this at the provincial level, they must be dealt with at the provincial level. We must not try to address our concerns about what may happen at the provincial level through the national legislation. What we are saying is that if there is, for instance, a fear or a concern that a person elected at the provincial level may not be the rightful person, that must be dealt with by the provincial legislation. Provincial. It must not now be dealt with at the national level. So that is our standpoint, and we seem to see this thinking, you know, permeating the whole argument, that when the presenters have a concern about what, that the rightful person may not be the withdrawal of a person, if there has to be a withdrawal, the withdrawal must take place at the provincial level. If there is a disqualification of a person for whatever reason, that must be instituted at the provincial level. It must not be allowed to be attended to at the national level through a national legislation. That's what we're saying. Regulatory powers, clause 24. We are saying that in any organization, we agree then that to save time, there will be consultation. We are happy that there is the need is being seen for the minister to play a role. But we concede then that the minister can and may and should consult the House on those regulations. As long as the minister is allowed, because in any organization, there are instances where the minister has to make regulations because of certain circumstances that were overlooked before, but that now necessitates this, and we agree with that. The code of conduct, again, the same thing must prevail. Then that that issue. It must be dealt with at the provincial house, at the provincial level, and not at the national level.
gender composition. The thinking, Chairperson, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable House, was that, as you correctly said, if there are no quotas, nothing happens. With your permission, let me state this, for instance, that when the National House was about to conduct elections for the new term last year, it was lobbied to make sure that the gender issue was taken into consideration. And there was an understanding that this would be the case. But unfortunately, that didn't happen because it was just based on lobbying and the membership of the leadership of the National House does not reflect that. That goes to support what you said, Chairperson, yesterday, that if there is no quota, nothing that really binds people to something, then the likelihood, for whatever reason, is that nothing will happen. Secondly, Chairperson, we are saying this one, that if Amakosi don't see anything wrong, we are not saying it should be one third. We're saying they can give 100% or 50%. 50% or 100% representation of women. But at least one third. At least one third. They can go above that. But at least one third. We know that in some countries, in some cases, in some provinces, there will be a challenge even to get that one third. But we have to have a quota. Otherwise, we cannot have a free-for-all, because that would be a recipe for disaster. So let me say that. Section 4, Chairperson, with your permission, let me say that section, with your permission, we are requesting that it be withdrawn and be redrafted, because there are certain challenges there. I'm nearing the end, Chairperson, to some of these concerns. The solution. There was a concern about the solution. And I think it was adequately articulated by you, with your permission to quote you, that even Parliament dissolved. What is unconstitutional about the House dissolving? So it has to dissolve when the time, as long as we understand that until such time that there are new elections, people continue to be members. You know, the transition. So otherwise, it must dissolve at the end of the term. And as an overall response, Chairperson, the House here, if I may call it, must understand, must differentiate between the two entities here with respect to the traditional leadership issues, the traditional structures, and the non-traditional structures. Traditional councils, kingship councils, the traditional structures. The houses, these are not traditional structures. And so there must be that with the non-traditional structures, even with the traditional structures, let me start by saying that both the policy document, which is the white paper, as well as the legislation, spell out that there has to be transformation of this institution. There has to be a transformation of this institution so that it is in line with Constitution, especially the Bill of Rights. That seems to be overlooked all the time, and I've been talking quietly with the institution that has to happen.
even for their own sake. Because if that doesn't happen, they are going to be pieces of museums at the end of the day. Out of touch with reality, because people are transforming. Secondly, with the traditional, with the non-traditional structures, the houses, it's even more imperative, Chairperson, that they must reflect what actually happens in a democratic dispensation. And so when we listen to members, especially the Honorable Tasman leaders, being selective on some of these things, that they want, in some instances, trappings of this. But in other instances, they don't want all the other, that they must live up to the requirements of. So, meaning they must transform. So for some to say there must be no elections for houses, that they must just be allowed to, so I don't think that is possible. For traditional institutions, we're ready to listen to some of the innovations that may fly in the face of tradition, that may even cause a destruction, without abandoning the need for them to transform. But, for instance, where we're talking about the houses, for instance, which are modern and non-traditional issues, traditional structures, I think the government is saying then that these must be seen to be really in keeping with the expectations. And I hope and I wish and I would like to maintain that, Chairperson, that and remind about that we need to coax the institution. We need to coax the institution to understand that they have to slowly but painfully moving in that direction, because it is a requirement by the Constitution, and they have to guard against being selective in their acceptance of these things. With your permission,
any addition?
Yes.
Thank you, Chairperson, honorable members, and honorable traditional leaders present. Chair, my mind is just on the issue of autonomy, which was raised yesterday and today. This is a policy issue, Chair, which will need to address as government, but also as traditional leaders, in terms of defining and unpacking this concept of autonomy. What does it mean? And I think the key issues that we'll need to look at is comprehensively, what does autonomy mean in the context of the role of the institution as a whole, looking at that, your local traditional council, your local houses, provincial houses, and national houses, but also kings and queens, and also the issue that has been raised of full-time members. I think it also impacts on this whole concept of autonomy. But I think based on the issues that have been raised in these 2 days, Chairperson, the issue of autonomy centers around the issue of what is it about the traditional institution having a right to own budget, to employing own staff, to independent financial administration, independent planning processes. And then so it has been presented, but largely it revolves around those key issues. And the way it has been presented, autonomy would mean a similar arrangement as the Chapter 9 institution, public entity or juristic person. And these are the key issues that I think have been raised. But the point that I'm raising, Chair, I'm saying this is a policy question which we need to, both government and I think as in the institution, we need to investigate what does it mean if one takes this autonomy. Because your, if you take your Chapter 9 institution, have a specific mandate that they have to perform. And I don't think it's actually fair to equate that to the role and the importance of the institution of traditional leadership in terms of what the institution has to do. So I think collectively we will need to then look at investigating this concept in terms of unpacking what it means, looking at the cost implications of it. But unfortunately, in the current two bills, this is not provided for. So we'll need to have that engagement, firstly, government taking a policy on the ruling party, taking a policy on what does it mean, this issue of autonomy from whom. But as a department, we are undertaking processes to look at this issue. But also this issue, it also arises because of the inadequacies of government in supporting the institutions, both at the national and at the provincial level. So some of the problems arise from that context. So we need to look at all of this and what programs already are in place to support the institution and how can we accelerate those. But also, I think in principle, we don't have a problem with this issue. I think we support that. But we just need to unpack it and collectively determine what does it mean in practice, in the context of the role that traditional leaders need to perform in society.
Now, Marana. Kusma Vunz from Tolila, Bangu from Melanulia. Legislation by its nature, bills, and this is why they are called bills, are intended to produce dialogue about its intended purposes. And the result, usually and often, is differences emerge about whether, as proposed, they meet the objective that have been said. As I understand dialogue, sometimes in the presentation of our staff, some choose very flowery language like Nkosi Buthelezi. Very flowery language. I'm citing it as today's example that can be very heated in its content and tone. Now, you can do one of two things. You can choose to target the tone and the floweriness of the language to condemn all of it and throw it out. Or to listen to the tone, throw it out, and go for the substance. Somewhere there is something that has been said in that language. And then address the issues on the table. So, dialogue has often been said that your views can either be amended, totally embraced, or completely rejected. That's in the nature of dialogue. These bills produce that process. So today, I think this is what has been happening from yesterday to today. We have had different views about this matter. Some of them have produced a little heat internally to us. That's fine. That's part of the dialogue. But the purpose is to finally arrive at a decision that this is what needs to happen about these bills. The committee will sit to deliberate on the views that we have heard from yourself and from the department. I would imagine that the department would be crazy to think that if they present a bill to us, the committee will say, yeah, and pass it like that. I mean, that would be absolutely crazy if they would expect it. I know that they don't expect it. So similarly, when we request honorable members and traditional leaders to present stuff to us, I would imagine that they expect that we will explore what they are saying to the maximum to see whether it fits with the mandate we have to produce the legislation that we are being asked to produce, including the possibility of saying, no, we don't think this is okay. This is the route to go. So this is the spirit with which I would suggest we take what we have heard today, that there are no firm conclusions about it, that we expect the House. I would think that Nkosi Mavundla and Nkosi Holomisa, including Nkosi Kodam,
raised an area around which they think the House should meet to discuss. That's appropriate. I think I thought that in fact there are more issues around which you need to do that. There are areas in which there's agreement in, by the provincial houses and the national house, but there are differences as well. So it would be useful for you to have that opportunity to go and sit down to speak about those issues that emerges from the different provincial houses and see if there is a possibility of harmonizing those. Even as we know there are differences and diversity in the country as a whole. So what we are trying to do is to produce as close as possible framework legislation, truly framework, which is the point that has been raised from the House of KwaZulu-Natal, that if it were to be done, I would imagine that they would argue it must really be framework. The point is very important, that so that discussion is important internally to the House, in there represented by the provincial houses for exploration, just as we as a committee are going to sit down to look at this and discuss them and our deliberations and then give the department feedback. So you will be briefed about the next steps so that when we require you to give us further views or views around those issues, we will ask you to do that, and so with the department as well. So the committee will see to do that. So thank you very much. I'm told reliably that lunch is ready next door. So that's where we'll go. That's yes. Correct. Yeah. Thank you very much.
Thank you.